Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Game Junk Podcast for January 2017. This is episode number 31, and my name is Sean.
My name is Frank.
And my name is Andrew.
Coming up on this month's podcast, we've got a breakdown of the latest Nintendo Switch news and all the info about the launch of Nintendo's new console. We're also going to be counting down our top 10 games of 2016. We're actually doing it. Can you believe it? I can't.
Nope.
We got some other stuff we played, and we have a bit of an announcement as well. So thanks for tuning in. It's actually been a little shorter between shows than usual, I think, right?
No, I don't think so. I think it's been 3 months. I think the last show was in November. End of November? Oh, I guess 2 months.
Two, 3 months. I guess maybe about...
Right on,
definitely
right on
not
schedule.
Setting any new records, but
right on schedule.
Well, I think I've played about 4 games since the last time, so it's probably a good indicator. It's been a short gap.
Yeah. Well, and this may end up being a slightly shorter show, although every time we say that, it doesn't turn out to be the case. But we'll see what happens. So, I guess just a couple things up front. You know, we tend to mention this every time, but we do have a website, gamejunkpodcast.com, but if you, you know, kind of want to join in discussions that are happening around the episode, you probably want to go to filmjunk.com. It seems to be where most of the commenting happens. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/gamejunk. Twitter is @gamejunkpodcast, and you can email us at gamejunkpodcast@gmail.com.
I would say the Facebook page, it sometimes a conversational stir up there. Gets a little intense.
Yeah, I mean, we throw up, you know, news on there every now and then, and yeah, there sometimes are discussions happening, so check them out. But, you know, as you probably know, it is a fairly irregular podcast whenever we can fit it in, but it's always fun to do it. So there is kind of one big reason we wanted to rush to get this episode recorded, which is that, Frank, you have a bit of an announcement.
Yes, yes. Announcing the game I've been working on, which is now public news. It's an original game made by Creative Byte Studios, where I work, called Embers of Miriam. It's an adventure platformer with a unique twist on taking traditional platforming controls and adding dual stick temporary movement and flight and switching back between those two forms, and yeah, hopefully building on that, adding puzzles, chases, bosses, trying to get a nice, well-rounded, paced experience. The trailer's out there. I would urge all of the listeners to check out embersofmiriam.com, M-I-R-R-M. No, M-I-R-R-I-M.
There you go.
That's the game I was working on.
You also are going to be showing off the game in a few places. Well, I guess, first of all, does the game have a release date yet?
Not quite. I think the trailer has targeting spring 2017. PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Steam, which we are on Greenlight now as well. So if you could go through the website, embersofmiriam.com, that's M-I-R-R-I-M.com, and check out the Greenlight and vote for us. I would greatly appreciate it. I ask so very precious little of the listeners, please do me this favor and check that out. And especially spread the word if you like what you see. That would be huge.
Yeah, so the trailer, Huck and I just saw the trailer for the first time.
We did.
I thought it looked pretty good. Like, we played the, you know, some early prototypes. It's been a while since I've seen the game.
Yeah, did you play it, Huck? I can't remember.
No, I didn't. Yet. That's the first I've seen of it.
Oh, well, there you go. So what'd you think, Huck? Are you intrigued by this trailer?
Yeah, I thought it was good. It was a short trailer. It was, what, maybe 30, 40 seconds?
Yeah, yeah. It's a tease.
So just a taste. And obviously, I can't see what's going on the controller. But it looks kind of like... Is it auto-scroll?
No. You are...
Oh, no.
You're kind of switching back between traditional platforming and splitting, essentially, into two other ones. You control when you do that, and you move them independently to navigate through obstacles and other new things and interact with creatures and relics with those two embers, each of your light and dark embers, and you affect the world differently and use them to traverse and, you know, find secrets. And you're kind of trying to defeat a corruption in the world using your special power.
I was going to say, it's kind of like a, from the trailer, it makes it look like kind of a mix between like a traditional platformer. And there's that shooter game, shmup game, where there's like a light and dark where you have to flip your ship over. But
Ikaruga?
Ikaruga. Kind of like that, where you're splitting your guy and you need to follow like particular light orbs with the proper person or the proper light or dark side. And that's the twin stick controls?
Yeah, where you're navigating those embers independently, and kind of I'm planning out interesting routes and ways of using them and motions and mazes, among other things. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work on, and I'm excited and curious to see the reaction. I hope it's very positive, obviously.
Yeah, I like the character design. The enemy design looked neat. There was like a giant mushroom thing, a giant almost like sandworm looking monster.
Yeah, see, like none of that stuff. I hadn't seen any of that stuff previously, so I am very intrigued now. But yeah, definitely digging the overall fantasy vibe of it.
Yes, pushing adventure, fantasy, inspired by like the pacing of Uncharted, the like variety of something like Rayman as a platformer, and just, yeah, keep on pushing, testing, trying to see, teach people the new mechanic. That's probably been the biggest struggle design-wise, is how to introduce things and guide the player into what is a somewhat new idea. And it's evolved a lot, and I'm pretty proud about where it is right now.
So I think the plan will be, we'll have a future episode around when the game launches, and we'll do kind of like what we've done with Citizens of Earth and some other games that have launched.
Severed and stuff.
Severed with, you know, friends that we've had on the show. And so we'll have Frank on, and probably Paul and Sean, who also worked on the game. And we'll kind of talk about the development and all of that. Now, I did, you know, I don't want to jump the gun on that, but I did, something just kind of occurred to me. Are you guys at all concerned with the, I've tried the controls, and I think they work really well, and they are unique, but the idea of the dual thumbstick controls, and coming from a team of people who worked on Two Human, is there any concern of backlash over this, Frank?
Well, I hadn't considered that at all until now.
Maybe I'm the first one to even...
Yeah,
this,
no,
but
it's a little, it's not, how do I say this? I feel like it's broken up enough, and I mean, you were one of the first playtesters, and we have like seen how people take to the controls, and the beginning of the game is very meticulously thought out to bring players into the experience. So I think we've done a good job of avoiding any confusion or struggles with that, and recent playtests seem to reflect that. So, yeah, I think we're okay.
I can't imagine that being a problem. You're talking about a 2D game versus a 3D game. You don't need,
I mean, like,
you don't need the other control for a camera or anything.
I just remember when Two Human came out, and it was obviously trying to do, you know, like it was a control scheme that hadn't really been done that much. And there was just a lot of people were just like, why are you doing this? This is, why change what works? And obviously this is, you know, right off the bat, it's not a triple A game. It's an indie game. It's trying for something a little more experimental to begin with, I think. Right. So, I think people will embrace that, but it's just, an interesting parallel, I guess. Now, Frank, did you want to mention the places you guys are going to be bringing the game to?
Sure. Well, the only one for sure right now is this weekend. I'll be at PAX South in San Antonio. We'll be showing the game off every day of PAX South. We'll have a booth, which I will tweet out, and I'm sure the game will tweet out with more information, or on Facebook. So follow those, And everything is through the website Embers of Miriam. Sean, Paul, and myself put a lot of work into it. So, like, we've been waiting to announce for a long time. So it's a good feeling, I think, for all of us. And nerve-wracking as well.
Yeah, it's exciting times. So, yeah, everybody should check it out. And we'll definitely be plugging it a bit more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you need to say?
I don't think so.
Is there a Twitter account for the game specifically, or is it just Creative Bytes?
I believe so, and Facebook, but I would go through the website. It's the portal for everything. It's pretty sleekly designed. Shouldn't be a problem to find anything through there.
Okay.
And the trailer is there as well. If you don't want to dig through video game websites and some screenshots, you can go directly to Embers of Miriam, MIRRIM.com.
Perfect. Nailed it.
All right. So we're going to jump into, I guess, some Nintendo Switch discussion. Now, Huxley, you had a little bit of a
lead-in.
Yeah, news story slash personal anecdote.
Yes, I did.
Related to this.
So one of the news stories that came out while we were off was that Nintendo was offering up to a $20,000 bounty for anyone to basically tell them about any exploits to, you know, unlock pirating and other privacy concerns on the 3DS. And
which that has been an issue for them over the past year or two, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Citizens of Earth got hit with it, and we had to fix it, quote-unquote. And what happened was we ended up going through the whole process. So they pulled the game off the store once they found the exploit, all regions. And then we went through like a 1 to 2 month process of getting it fixed and recertified and finding out from Nintendo what the problem was. Then we patch it, send it back to them. They approve it. They put it up on the store. And the same guy says he's cracked it within 2 hours of being back up on the store. Like, the first thing he tried, he said it worked. It just leads me to believe that Nintendo really has no idea what these hackers are doing to get into their system. And I'm hoping that people are actually taking them up on this bounty offer and that they're working it into the Switch, like, ecosystem OS, so that the Switch doesn't have the same sort of issues that the 3DS is having. I mean, I don't know how rampant the piracy on the 3DS is pretty rampant, but I don't know how fast I don't even know if the Wii U is cracked yet, but
yeah,
it seems
sure.
Like something that Nintendo obviously couldn't figure out, and maybe the reason that we haven't seen a 3DS successor and that we've seen the Switch go to this sort of hybrid handheld console is because they are just kind of abandoning the 3DS because maybe they don't think they could fix it. Maybe there's too many, you know, behind the scenes stuff that's they can't fix, or it'd be really hard to fix. So they've just kind of started fresh with the Switch, and just they don't have a successor for the 3DS. They don't have a 3DS 2 or whatever they're going to call it. They would call it. They're just going all in on Switch now, and right. I think that could be a real reason. And hopefully they learn something from these hackers that are getting paid to tell them where they screwed up, basically.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, on the one hand, that bounty thing definitely, to me, would indicate that they just don't want to put time, money, or resources into fixing this because it's not worth it at this point, right? They're abandoning this platform, and it's like, well, we kind of want to fix it, but we don't want to, you know, use our own resources to fix it. And, I mean, the weird thing, though, is I have heard a lot of people saying that Nintendo hasn't specifically said that they're halting production of the 3DS. Like, it's almost like they're hedging their bets a little bit. They're afraid to do that because they don't know how the Switch is going to do.
Well, Sean, there was some speculation, and our good friend Jay from the Film Junk podcast has been dying to get his hands on a 3DS, finally did yesterday. I didn't ask him about it today, but
it is a very hot item right now because of the new Pokemon games. So.
Well, what I was just about to say was they did announce a new 3DS today.
Oh, really? I didn't even see that.
Like, not a nothing technically new, but visually new. Not a Pokemon. Well, kind of Pikachu skinned new 3DS. So, and they've promised that this is just went up now that Pikmin will still be coming to 3DS this year. So maybe it is a little more viable than we had speculated.
Maybe the thing that was frustrating to me was that Nintendo like told us what the problem was, and then approved our fix. And then it was still an issue, like immediately. So obviously, either they didn't test it thoroughly, or they don't know what to test.
And you didn't get 20 Gs.
Yeah, and I didn't get 20 grand.
Yeah, that's pretty lame. Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point as well, I guess, with, you know, tying this back into all the new stuff we've learned about the Switch over the past couple of weeks. I mean, the big question really is, like, is it a handheld system or not? And, you know, my initial impressions of it was it's not. But now seeing videos, like, when we talked about it last time, in my head, I thought it was much bigger than it actually is. When you see people play it, it's quite small. It looks, like, obviously when you undock it and take it out, it looks very much like a handheld system. And it almost feels like they're really pushing that angle, like that's, they want people to see it that way, and that's what they're hoping will differentiate it. But I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing. I'm still very confused. I have no idea how this thing's going to do. Well, why don't we talk about, so obviously,
well,
the big
actually
thing,
on that note, has anyone seen like side-by-side comparison of the Vita hardware to it?
Like in terms of specs?
No. Size, like physical size.
I think it's
slightly bigger.
I was going to say slightly smaller.
It is bigger.
Yeah? I think it is. I think the screen is
way bigger.
But I wonder how much bigger it is. I didn't actually see any. I haven't seen any sort of like physical comparisons to it side by side yet.
Here's one, although it's a little hard to see from this angle. See here, it looks.
So it looks like the screen width is about the full size of the Vita,
but it's
minus the controllers.
Yeah, and then you have to put. It's definitely taller, as wide without the controllers, wider with the controllers, but it still is a little smaller than I thought.
I guess maybe we start with what I think is one of the bigger things, which is the price point. Which they announced, which will be, is it $299 in the U.S. and $399 in Canada? Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yep. The peripherals are quite expensive.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Do you have prices on those, Frank? Or?
Not off the top of my head, but...
I think it was $80 for the Joy-Cons.
And the bundle, yeah. When you put it in the dock and take off the controllers and put it on the Joy-Con grip... I don't believe that one charges the controllers that comes with the system. So the only way to charge the controllers is to either get a charging version of that or put them back on the dock or some version of that. So, I think that's it. So I don't know.
Have they talked about the battery life for the Joy-Cons themselves? I've heard them talk about the battery life for the console off the dock.
Yeah.
But has anyone heard them talk about the battery life of the controllers?
I think I might have heard 13 hours. I'm not sure, though. Don't quote me on that. But, I mean...
That would make sense. It's just a tiny controller, right? It shouldn't be doing that much.
Yeah, and if you... I know I'm not crazy about it. I don't really care about kickstand mode, but apparently...
It says Joy-Con controllers, 20 hours on a single charge.
Yeah, is that with or without HD Rumble, Sean?
I'm guessing without, but I don't know.
Well, I was HD Rumble. Definitely disappointed with the announcement. I mean, there wasn't a ton of surprises in terms of the console itself. But I mean, the games, there's so few games at launch. And like Nintendo has
like 7 or 8.
Maybe 5 or 6. Like Nintendo themselves have Breath of the Wild and 1-2 Switch, and I think that's it.
Is ARMS theirs?
ARMS isn't until summer.
Oh, right, yeah.
And even Mario Kart Deluxe isn't until the end of April.
They didn't even show that game.
Like so,
so I got a list. So the why did this
the Sean Internet special?
Okay, so the official launch titles that will be out March 3rd with the system. We have 1-2 Switch. We have The Binding of Isaac Afterbirth,
which is going for $50 in Canada.
What? Just Dance 2017, Human Resource Manager, I Am Setsuna. Not sure what that is.
That's an RPG that was on the PlayStation Store. I think Hawk played it.
I haven't played it, but I want to play it. I know what it is.
Is it like a full game, though? Or
yeah,
is it,
yeah, well, I think it was $40.
Yeah,
it's like, kind of like The Witness.
Yeah, it's a JRPG, right?
Yep. Made by Tokyo Mirage Factory, I think, or one of the like Japanese studios.
Okay. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Little Inferno, which has been around for quite a while now.
Which is a Wii U launch title. I bought that day one on the Wii U.
Skylanders Imaginators, which is last year's? No, well, it was the 2015 game, right? Is that the one you worked on, Frank?
No, 2016. I worked on Superchargers.
Oh, right, okay. And then Super Bomberman R, which, you know, that
could be fun.
That's something I would pick up. And then World of Goo, which again was...
like 2008?
Yeah. Is Nintendo buying 2D Boy or something? Like, what is going on here?
But we haven't even seen anything from 2D Boy since Little Inferno, right?
They're working on Metroid Prime remake, guaranteed. Both of them.
Oh, I'm joking. I thought you were gonna confirm that
no,
for a second.
No, not at all. That's sheer speculation. Now, we have to get to the brass tacks of this. Did you pre-order?
No.
Well, I did.
I did as well.
We talked about on Film Junk. Now, I, you know, based on the press conference, I was like, I'm out. Not interested at all. Like, nothing is selling me on this. I'll just pick up Zelda for the Wii U and I'm good. But as seems to always happen with fucking Nintendo hardware, immediately pre-orders sold out. And I started second guessing and I was like, I don't know, maybe I will want it. I don't know for sure. I just, you know, don't want to be out of luck on launch day. So Best Buy reopened some pre-orders and I jumped in on it, but I'm not feeling great about it. I mean, I'm always excited about a new console, but stuff like 1-2 Switch, like that was the first game they showed at the
conference, the presentation.
Yeah, and I was just like, what is this? Like, I cannot believe this is their centerpiece thing.
It's the HD Rumble, you know, demo game.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. Like, and, I'm all for Nintendo putting out these quirky little experimental games, but, like, you got to give me something a little more than that.
Did they announce the price of that? It's going to be a full
pretty
deal?
Much, I think. I believe it 50. Is a full... Yeah. My prediction right now, Sean absolutely loves 1-2 Switch. I think it's got a bit of a WarioWare vibe going on to it. It's got quick experiences.
I was just going to say, the last... like few Nintendo consoles have always had a WarioWare game at launch, which, you know, they've been a little bit hit or miss. I mean, that's kind of how those games are, but they always show off the hardware in interesting ways and they're usually pretty fun. Like I do like most of them. I don't know why this couldn't have been that. If it was a WarioWare game, I probably would have been more interested, but it just looks so bland. I don't get it. And I guess they're pushing this idea of like not even having to look at the screen to play or something. But
yeah,
why?
You're interacting with people, Sean. Don't be such a fucking robot. Look someone in the eyes once in a while.
Well, I mean, I guess that is why it was the centerpiece of their presentation, because that's the thing they hope will set this system apart. You know, that you can take it over to your friend's house and have a... you know,
big party.
Impromptu
party.
Nintendo Switch party, which in theory, I guess I like that idea, but personally, I don't see myself using that very often. Maybe it's just not a system for me. But, you know, again, I can't help but compare it to the Vita and just say, well, people like the 3DS. They like the sort of 2D handheld pick up and play games that Nintendo has done. They don't want full console experiences in a mobile device. That seems to be what people have said with their wallets in previous years. So,
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
There's still the biggest questions to me are left unanswered in terms of the operating system or navigation of the Switch, which was horrendous on the Wii U and a total disaster in terms of online functionality. So, I mean, that still is a make or break issue, and whether they're going to add some sort of trophies or achievements would be a deal breaker for me as well. Could pull me over.
Did you guys see that article on Kotaku where they, I think it was Jason Schreier, asked Nintendo some questions about basically all the details, and they're just like, no comment on almost everything.
Which
there's
is
very few things they actually had commented on. It was like the battery life, which we already knew, and some other stuff we already knew, but the like store and the compatibility with previous purchase, they wouldn't comment on like SNES animation. Yeah, backwards compatible, all this stuff. They wouldn't, or they said there was no support for like disc games from other systems.
Right.
But they didn't, they had no comment on digital. Like basically just no comment on the online functionality, which they never talked about really. Like there's just a bunch of stuff that people need to know. I mean, it's almost February now at the time of this recording, and it's only a month away.
Yeah.
And we know like so there's so many holes, and that's what, so when going back to pre-orders, I was thinking of pre-ordering, and I'm never an early adopter. The price point didn't scare me off or anything. And I really like I love my Vita still. So I was like, oh, this will be a nice like Nintendo Vita. You know, I get all my Nintendo games on this Vita. This is kind of cool. I never had a Wii U, so maybe I'll get some, you know, Wii U games backwards compatible through the eShop or whatever. But the lack of details so close to launch and the lack of games is really like I really found nothing compelling me to pre-order. I like if there's nothing to play, I'm not going to be in a rush to go have this thing sit on my shelf.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't pre-order.
Especially,
but I am still interested in it.
Especially considering that Nintendo has been barely putting out games at all. And we've talked before, it felt like they were pulling whatever they had scraps of together to have a game they could ship on their systems, like Metroid Federation Force and Star Fox Zero. And the result was obviously not good. So you assume they're working on bigger and better things, hopefully for the launch. And the only thing we have that is even new or a surprise is Mario Odyssey, which I think looks awesome, but is still a year away.
Yeah, and if you knew this was coming, and you're pumping out a Pokemon game every year, why not have a team basically just work on getting it rendering nice and put one out on the Switch for launch? I mean, the Pokemon formula is pretty set in stone now. It's not like you're doing anything crazy. You just need to rewrite, you know, some of your graphics stuff to make it look, you know, HD, up-res, you know.
Now, they did say, I believe, that there will be a Pokemon game coming, but there's no official details on
it. Yeah, but
anything.
I mean, like,
it's just like saying,
you're a month out from launch, you should be pumping that right now.
Yeah.
Like, you have Zelda, and that's it.
That's a huge missed opportunity, for sure. And, you know, stuff like Mario Kart 8, just repackaging it and adding battle mode, which should have been there in the first place, like, that kind of pisses me off, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like the system, they're largely marketing it to people who didn't buy a Wii U, and it's like, well, you missed the last system, so jump on board now.
Oh, but with what? Not even.
I assumed that was going to happen because, no one played those games, and in theory, they should be easy to port, and that's why I traded in most of my Wii U stuff, assuming there'd be a better version on this console. And I just think, like, I'm really surprised by the lack of content, and the biggest thing, Sean, is we are part of the problem. And
really?
Of course we are, because we continue to pre-order and buy, and even when they put out disappointing item after disappointing item, there is a Breath of the Wild, which, like, I'm super excited for, and I will have to play. And, like, I don't know if I'll ever stop doing that. I know we made the analogy in terms of fuck, marry, kill, that I'm married to Nintendo, and I do truly feel that way, where, like, high highs, you've gone through everything together and you just like that connection is so tight, no matter how much it disappoints you or like the, it becomes a rough ride. You want to stick through it. And because you love it so much. And I don't know, I'm still disappointed, but I am so excited still to play Breath of the Wild in basically 5 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, you could have played it on the Wii U, I guess.
I need obviously. The superior format, Sean.
I get it.
Take it on the go.
But, I mean, I'm surprised when Twilight Princess launched, did they not hold back the
GameCube.
The GameCube version for
yes.
like a month or two?
And the GameCube
I'm surprised
version was
they're not doing that.
Completely flipped.
That's right, yeah. That was pretty weird. Yeah, well, so one thing we haven't mentioned, which I think...
Well, you know why that was flipped, right? The game was flipped because Link is left-handed, but 90% of the people in the world are right-handed. So when you do motion controls for the Wii, they thought most people wouldn't be able to play left-handed with the sword.
Right.
So they actually flipped it for the Wii so that he was right-handed on the Wii, so that the majority of people would feel comfortable, and then they left it how it was supposed to be on the GameCube.
But I think the whole game world was flipped too, though.
Oh, well, maybe they just mirrored it.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, yeah, they I probably just they... mirrored it. That was probably the easiest thing, but...
Yeah. So, one thing that was kind of mentioned and has been talked about since the last press conference, which I think sets a bad precedent for where we're going... although not a surprising one, is the talk of the new Nintendo Online service.
Oh.
Which they're supposedly, you know, launching something to compete with the PlayStation Plus and Xbox Live.
I'll believe that when I see it.
And so, you know, they haven't said how much it'll cost. Apparently you need this to play online, if I'm not mistaken. There will be... I'm not sure what all the other benefits are, but there's discounts for games, and there will be free monthly games.
Game, I think.
One free monthly virtual console game, which I was like, when I heard that, I was like, oh, okay. That's kind of, that, because, you know, Frank has been talking for years about giving the Netflix virtual console service. And I actually did think maybe they were going to announce that for the Switch, because they obviously would have seen the success of the NES Classic. And apparently Nintendo is completely caught off guard by that, which boggles the mind. But anyway, I thought maybe they were going to go that direction. They didn't, but they announced that. And I thought, well, okay, maybe that's a step in the right direction. But apparently you can only play the game for the month that it's available, and then it leaves your game library.
Yep. Then you have to buy it regularly.
Yeah, which is like, are you kidding me? Like, people have bought... some of these virtual console games like 3 or 4 times on different systems now, and they're gonna sign up for this service, potentially get a game they already own on 4 other systems, and then you're gonna say nope, you get it for a month and then you gotta pay for it again.
The only caveat I heard was that they are gonna be adding online support, quote unquote, whatever the heck that means,
yeah,
to the games they put out. So I don't know what that means, like online multiplayer or just leaderboards, or you can have in-app chat, which is complete craziness once we get to that point,
yeah,
of what they're talking about.
Yeah, I kind of got the sense that they were talking about making something like Super Mario Kart playable online or something like that.
Yeah, that's what the first thing I thought of too, which I guess is kind of cool, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many of those games... need to be it's a fine feature, but it's not, I don't know if it warrants yet another repurchase for people. So you did touch on the voice chat,
yeah,
which
the chat app.
Never had previously, right, in any of their
that's correct.
Online stuff. So they're finally adding it, but it's not part of the console.
Nope.
It's a separate app that will run on your phone.
And it sounded like you can also, it's not just chat, but it's also like your friends list and, I don't know, probably the store. Like, it's probably going to be a Nintendo-specific app you load that has everything. I'm sure Sony has one as well. But yeah, it sounds like not including it with the system is just a big mistake, especially since did the original Xbox have that?
Yeah.
Like the original OG one? Xbox OG one?
I believe it did.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was, what, 15 years ago? It's time to get some VoIP calling going on.
That makes no sense to me. Like, especially, you know, obviously Nintendo's resistance to online stuff has always been, well, we got to protect the kids, you know, we got to keep it family friendly. We don't want this to be an environment that's unwelcoming to people, which I kind of bought that excuse for a while. But now it's like, why wouldn't you want it on your system where you have control over it? Like, you put it on a phone. I feel like that's...
And what happens when you receive a real phone call or get text messages or need to do anything on your phone that people use for everything now? You know, like, are you just going to shut down the app, stop playing your game? And I don't know. It seems like a weird decision, in my opinion.
I mean, it could end up just working fine and it will be seamless, and who cares? Because, yeah, most people have their phone beside them all the time anyway, but it is very strange and classic Nintendo.
I mean, there is potential for this launch to be a complete disaster.
Oh, well, big time.
Just one more thing on the voice chat app. I have a sneaking suspicion, too, that it's only going to be your friends list, and it's not going to be... like the people in your online match.
Yeah.
So there's going to be no like group chat. It's just going to be your friend or whoever you feel like talking with. And there's going to be no online with randoms sort of conversation able to happen through this app. Because it would need to interact with the Switch. Your smartphone would need to interact with it constantly to determine who's in your group right now. Or unless they have that online and the app's pulling from the online servers, they're magically...
I mean, you were talking earlier about security issues. Like, this seems like a huge security issue to me, but what do I know?
Yeah.
anyway, I guess the one other kind of small thing that we didn't know about previously that has been confirmed is that there is a touch screen.
Yes, that's a good point.
So that's...
I'm excited about that, actually. I'm glad they didn't abandon that. I think that would have been a huge mistake if they did.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. Like, especially if Nintendo is going to keep putting out games on phones as well, that opens the door for them to, you know, potentially have cross-platform stuff there, or at least reuse the engine they're using. Like, we could see a Super Mario Run come to the Switch, something like that.
Well, it'll be real easy to port Vita games to it and vice versa, which would be nice. Or even, you know, I mean, any other touch device, iOS type things.
Yep.
Well, Super Mario Run should be super easy to port because it was made with Unity. So if they've said Unity is going to get Switch support, so I would think it would be extremely easy.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, obviously another question that always comes up is third-party support.
And
yikes. It feels like the third parties have been, like, trying to be very vocal about how supportive they are of the Switch. But, you know, it comes back, like, I feel like we're kind of getting back to the same situation we always are in with the Nintendo consoles, which is that you get the same games that come out on other systems. But why would you choose the Switch version over the other ones? Like, I don't...
Well, first off, I think that the lack of third-party support is not from the lack of interest from third parties. From being on the Nintendo dev portal,
yeah,
I can tell you that there's a lot of interest from third parties. And I could just say that there's not much response from Nintendo as to getting dev kits or anything. So I haven't been on in a while, but I know when it was first announced, they were very tight-lipped, even with the devs, like in their own dev portal, about what was going on as far as getting kits, like getting ramped up. So I have a feeling like a lot of people are harassing Nintendo I know Ryan, like from Eden Industries, he's contacted his Nintendo rep a bunch of times and has gotten no response. So,
I mean, it sounds to me like they're focusing on the big third-party developers and they're not so concerned about the indie stuff, but, you know, another oversight on Nintendo's part. Like, the indie stuff could be a huge thing to bring people in. And
yeah. Well, I mean, what's the big indie you've heard? Bethesda with Skyrim? Like, what other... There's no other real big third parties. Like, FIFA's big. NBA's big.
Yeah.
But, like, there's been no Rockstar. There's been no... Has Ubisoft even... Other than Just Dance? Has they brought anything? Well, is there anything in that list?
Steep is on the list.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean...
I guess Atlas with Disgaea.
Yeah, but, I mean... Like,
but clearly they've talked to some indie developers because there are the 2D boy games as well as Binding of Isaac Afterbirth as well. So
yeah,
they've been very specific with who they've communicated that stuff with.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they're just really short on dev kits.
I mean, that probably is the case.
Yeah.
Or they're still working on the dev kit.
Yeah.
Well, that too. But yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. I don't know what to say. I'm always intrigued and yet very pessimistic when it comes to Nintendo stuff these days. And I don't, I was really hoping that the second press conference was going to be like, bam, here's the thing. Here's the killer thing you guys didn't expect. And it was not. It was just like, here's a few other details.
I
was just going to say, are they having another press conference before the launch date? Does anyone know?
I don't know.
No.
Frank?
I have no idea. I mean, there's still another thing I want to know is, in terms of the game cartridges, is it faster to run off the system hard drive or flash memory or to run off the cart? Should I be going digital or not? Or is buying carts actually faster for this
system?
That's
one thing to talk about, actually, the memory.
Yeah, only 32 gigs.
Yeah, 32 gigs. That's like... that's tiny by today's standard. That's nothing. I think I saw one article saying that if you bought Breath of the Wild digitally, it's 16 gigs. It's half your card for that one game.
And that's not
there
including
an expansion slot, but
the reserved portion.
Yeah, for the
and it
yeah,
takes
for the OS.
It takes micro SXD or something like that. I'm not sure the exact name, but those are pretty pricey.
Yeah.
If you want to add, 256 gigs, it's going to cost you like $60.
Got to hide those costs.
Shh.
Yeah. So I don't know if there was any other.
We should touch a bit more on Odyssey, maybe. Like, I thought.
I got one more hardware thing, actually, before we jump into the games.
Okay.
I was really impressed with the 8 local multiplayer you can do, where you bring 8 consoles around and they can talk to each other. I think that could be pretty interesting and like sort of like a game junk style hangout. If we have enough consoles, we can all just, it's very easy to bring that, right? It's just like bringing a Vita or a tablet. And then you could have some real fun playing those games in that fashion. So I could see that sort of thing being popular probably with like younger people that would be interested in the system. I don't know how easy the 3DS was to connect together with other people, but I imagine it was pretty tricky.
I don't know if I mean like online or
yeah,
local?
Online. Well, local, but not like Street Pass stuff, but like actual gameplay. Could you do that even?
Yeah, you could. I'm trying to think what I played. Did we play something on the 3DS, Frank?
I don't think so, but I think it's relatively easy. I know it was, like, I think they had that on the original DS too, I think, so.
I mean, I think Smash Brothers was a big, Super Smash Brothers was a big thing.
And right.
I think they, like, I know a lot of people at Game Loft had it and were playing all the time at lunch, so.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like there were any issues, but I didn't try it myself.
Yeah, so I mean like 8 people like that with like I was thinking for like sports games, you know, it's a lot easier if you have your own dedicated screen to your guy in a team atmosphere when you start throwing a bunch of guys on one screen, sometimes you can get lost as to like where you are. So it'd be nice to have like a focus camera, even with like racing games or anything like that. Like Mario Kart, if you have your own dedicated screen, it's pretty easy to play, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's cool. I don't know if it's going to sell people on the system. But, I mean, it does, like, definitely the thing that I would say this system should be pushing is party games. I mean, that was, when the Wii first came out, that was a huge thing. Like, just people getting together, playing Wii Sports and stuff. And, you know, if 1-2 Switch is their big party game, then I don't think they've got a hit on their hands, but...
Yeah, and, I mean, not really on that, but kind of on the overall thing with this presentation is I found that they kind of just like dangled the carrot in front of everyone and didn't give us enough details and almost like held the carrot so far away that you weren't really interested in the carrot. Like they mentioned how the one Joy-Con has like that IR sensor and even the HD rumble, like they gave these things that are like, they could be neat. They didn't really tell you how you could use them. Like, oh, you can...
Andrew, you have to feel it to believe it. You can feel the ice cubes going into the glass.
Just like the 3D of the 3DS, right?
Yeah,
get ready.
But I mean, that IR sensor thing, like, there could be neat gameplay things with that, probably. But I mean, how detailed is it? Like I said, you can do rock, paper, scissors in front of it. But is that like it? Is it like it can tell... two fingers versus three fingers versus zero fingers? Is that like the extent?
See, this is where you need your WarioWare game to showcase all
this
exactly.
stuff. There's and nothing really showing that.
That's 1-2 Switch.
Weird, like,
but they didn't. No, they didn't show anything like that though. They just showed the cowboy shootout game and the milk otter game.
Yeah. You don't think like what else? Think of a milk cutter. How does it work? You grab the top, you're going to squeeze it, feel the resistance at the top, and when you pull down, you're going to feel the HD rumble, the milk squirting through the teat. Like,
yeah, but where's the IR? I'm talking about the IR sensor.
Just be ready
for some HD.
You know
milk.
What?
The HD milk squeeze.
I will say this. If Nintendo does add a form of trophies or achievements, they might have me back permanently because this is a chance to do a clean reboot. You know, you have your gamer score and you look at other people and you're like, shit, they're 200,000 away from me. I'll never catch them. Or, you know, level 20 PlayStation versus my lowly 14 or 16, whatever I am. I'm like, I'll never catch these people. But with the Nintendo, it's a hard reset. It's a chance to start from scratch. And if they have it, I mean, I have to dedicate myself to becoming the number one Nintendo player on the planet.
Could happen.
Yeah, it could happen. I mean, I would assume they would have already announced it if it was happening, but who knows? I mean, you could probably add it later too if you wanted to. But so you wanted to talk about Super Mario Odyssey, Frank?
Yeah, I think we should mention it a bit. I think it looked great, very colorful. Love the look of the worlds. I'm not sure how crazy I am about the hub world being the real world, but I thought... Yeah,
a lot of people seem to be freaking out about the idea of Mario running alongside real people, or, you know, at least just regular animated human-like characters, I guess.
And did they even say that was the hub world?
No, not necessarily, but it seemed like because there was pictures of the other levels they showed on billboards and other aspects. They might have even said it was, I don't know if they did, but there is a space, like you get in the hat and travel from that world to the other one. So I think it is, not to say there isn't multiple hub worlds, but I do have to say some of the levels... Like, the forest level looked gorgeous. Like, I am super excited for this game. And I like that they kind of can go wherever they want with the visual design of the levels and what they include. And I wish this was a launch game because I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, it sucks that it's not a launch game because it is the one other game that I'm interested in. And you know, certainly looks like something different for Mario. So that's good news. They're not just doing another new Super Mario Brothers 2D kind of, you know,
yeah,
retro thing.
And the other game they kind of announced was Splatoon 2, which I, from what I could tell, you still have to aim by moving the tablet, which is why I couldn't stand playing Splatoon in the first place, that I couldn't just use a controller and aim my gun. So maybe I misheard that, or there are other options, but I hope not, because I want to like Splatoon. It's just, I hate having to I hate having to physically move, Sean. I can't stand it.
Oh, well, I can identify with that.
I would like it more if I was standing around. Like, I like VR when I'm standing and doing stuff, but to have to sit down and move your controller like a window is so annoying. I hate that when I'm playing.
Plus, that game looks exactly like Splatoon 1.
Yeah, that seems to be what everybody's saying.
It really should have been Splatoon Deluxe, like Mario Kart. I think it's kind of gross that they called it Splatoon 2. And yeah. Why isn't it just not Splatoon with a 2? Like, come on, Splatoon 2 does not roll off the tongue.
Anything else? I mean, there are a couple other games. That Snipper Clips thing could be interesting. ARMS.
Snipper Clips? I mean, what the fuck is Snipper Clips?
I never heard of that.
It's like a puzzly kind of game where you have to like cooperate to fit shapes in with people.
Yeah, that is fucking stupid, Sean. Are you stupid?
looks cooler than 1-2 Switch, as far as I'm concerned. But you know.
I thought ARMS looked like it could be interesting. It was kind of like Wii Boxing, but with actual control of both. And I don't know. At first I thought it was stupid. I was like, why not just make this punch out? But then after kind of thinking about it, I think there could be some subtle nuances to the controls of that game that make it pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by ARMS for sure.
I think the mechanic looks interesting. I just think like the characters in the world and everything else looks totally bland. Like it just looks like they had an idea and they just rushed this thing out, and maybe there will be more there when it actually launches, but
I'm looking up images of Snipper Clips.
Yeah.
I'm in, bud. It looks great.
Oh yeah.
Oh, look at that. Like that pencil sharpener. That's huge. I love it.
What about Sonic Mania? Is that it's coming on other systems too, right?
I mean, Sonic has been so bad for a while now. Like even the Sonic Generations, it was pretty good, but I can't believe how much I used to love Sonic when I was a kid, and now I just don't really care at all.
I was actually going to ask you guys if you had recommendations about Sonic games, because suddenly Kieran, I think there's like a Sonic show on Netflix that he discovered and started watching it. And then that was kind of one of the reasons why I dug out a bunch of my old consoles. I was trying to play the original Sonic on Genesis, and then I didn't have the right cable for it.
Well, Sean, I can tell you that all of the Sonic games are on sale this week on Xbox, and most of them are backwards compatible, so they're about $2 each or whatever.
So I guess, you know, I have emulators for like the original Genesis ones, and I think I have a couple of them on PSN as well, but I'm more interested, like, are there any of the more recent ones that are any good, or are they all garbage?
Generations was pretty good. I didn't play Lost World. Unleashed was good at first, but then they mix in the werewolf levels that are just terrible.
Okay.
What was the one before that? It was also not good. It was a disaster. Generations is the only one I would recommend. And the racing games, he likes Mario Kart. He might like Sonic Racing. Those are actually, those are good, yeah.
Okay. Was Sonic Colors, was that one of the more recent
ones? Sonic Colors, Sean, yes.
No good, though?
I think it was okay. I didn't play it a lot.
I think most people I had seen were also kind of recommending Generations as well.
Yeah, Sonic Colors
was like
kind
of some 2D stuff and 3D stuff. It was like a mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. That's about it as far as the Switch goes, I think. Do you guys have any other comments?
My only comment is that I'm not sure I'm ready for a super enormous open world Zelda game.
Well, this is my I mean, I was so excited for Twilight Princess, and I think I played maybe 3 hours of that game,
I beat that game and did not enjoy much of it. I know people love that game, and I don't know. I just found it a big grind.
Yeah, I think I kind of fell out of love with the more recent Zelda stuff, maybe because they're going so much towards open world. You know, I did obviously love the 3DS one they did a couple of years ago, but yeah, I don't remember the last Zelda game that I beat that, aside from that. So, but maybe this will win me back. I'm hoping.
Well, you got your pre-order, so did you pre-order Zelda? Did you pre-order Zelda?
I didn't. Well, that may be an issue. I don't know. Frank, are there going to be game shortages as well?
I don't know. The one reason why I'm semi-intrigued to not go digital with this system is it would be the one chance I have to take advantage of Amazon Prime cheap pre-orders for games. So,
right, yeah.
Might look into that. I don't think there's going to be a shortage at all for the games, but I could be wrong. And if that is the case, I will just buy them digitally.
Yeah, I guess that's always an option.
Got to go digital now. It's the future.
I do want to go digital, though, especially when you consider the fact that the console is on the go and you could just essentially take the games with you.
And let's be honest, you got it. If Nintendo doesn't keep your purchase history on some unified account system now, they're going to just screw themselves out of this generation because everything's going that way. It's so, like, PSN's been doing it for a while. Xbox now doing it. It's just the way. It's so convenient and so user-friendly to have those backwards-compatible games that when Switch 2 comes out or whatever, if they do support Switch 1 and you then have to rebuy Switch games, like, yeah, no one will buy that. Not now. It'll be over. Even with the Wii U, if they say they're supporting Wii U games, but you bought your Wii U digital games and you can't play them, you have to like rebuy a Switch version of your Wii U games, people lose their minds, I think.
Well, it's already like, I think that's why they're so unwilling to commit to anything right now. Cause I think the truth is you probably will have to rebuy stuff and they know people are going to freak out about it.
I think the truth is they cannot do it. They cannot manage it. And the way they emulate stuff and, it just, they literally can't do it, and they're probably embarrassed to say, we're too fucking dumb.
Or they just don't want to pay for the infrastructure and hire, you know, people to manage the servers and stuff like that. Because I'm sure it's quite an expense and a lot of work to get that sort of infrastructure going.
Yeah, and they can make more money just making people
buy them again stuff. Exactly, and people obviously do rebuy them every time. So if you have a rabid fan base that never gets mad at you, and
I guess that's true,
defends everything you do no matter what and pretends to be excited about everything and rationalizes every decision they make, and like me and Sean buys everything they make anyway.
Hasn't beat a Zelda game since Link to the Past, but is excited for the new one.
The joke is on us.
Time, bud.
Oh,
but yeah, I to be fair, I've talked to a few hardcore Nintendo people who surprisingly were not that into the Switch, or at least did not pre-order. And I don't know. It seems like some of that could be fading, but I don't know. I thought that with the Wii U.
Well,
too,
the problem, so. This is where they may have screwed themselves with their loyals, which is, I don't think there's enough to intrigue a loyal to buy the system, because the loyals have a Wii U and they tend to be probably cheap enough that they would just like say, oh, I'll just get Breath of the Wild for a Wii U and wait for Odyssey or something else, or when it's cheaper to buy the Switch. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
So, do you still have that page up with the
launch titles?
The games that are coming out? Because, like, okay, we got a few things in March, and then like one or two things in spring.
Yep, and Splatoon 2 in summer,
and then holiday.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
So that's like, oh, there's not much. Like, even for the rest of the year, like from now until Odyssey in November, December. It's kind of a gaping hole.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure there will be stuff that pops up, but you would think they want to get that stuff announced now to sell the system, right?
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, what is that, Mario Kart in spring?
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe in April.
And the ARMS game. And yep. Really, those other games are nothing.
Tetris and Snipper Clips and Has-Been Heroes. Not sure what that is. Frank?
No idea. I really hate that Skyrim is still a big deal.
Yeah. Yes.
I guess the other kind of big deals we didn't mention, which are marginally interesting, is the Super Bomberman R and the Ultra Street Fighter 2 remake, which have people excited.
Yeah.
And why is Skyrim going to be a year to come out?
Who knows, like, man?
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I should be able to port
that in under a year.
Yeah, I mean, like, I assume it's the remastered version they're, you know,
partly,
releasing,
I think,
but...
partly. But I'm assuming it's also Nintendo doesn't want it competing with Breath of the Wild, which looks like it's borrowed a lot of Skyrim's elements.
And maybe Skyrim just is like, oh, we'll put it as like a holiday, get the holiday purchases or something. I don't know. It seems weird. Like, you're releasing a game, you're announcing a game that's already been out for like 4 years, and you're saying it's not going to be out for another year, basically. It seems so strange.
Yeah, it's cuckoo bananas.
And people are somehow excited by it.
Yeah,
well.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yep.
And they're going to make a shit ton of money and love life even more.
We didn't talk too much about the price, but I will say, you know, it's hard to judge because the Canada-US thing. Like, I hear $299 and I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. But then I see $399 in Canada, I'm like, oh, that feels expensive. So I do feel like maybe it is expensive for what it is, but... What did the Vita launch at? Do you guys remember?
No. $250 maybe?
Yeah, I thought it was $250 for the bundle I bought, I think.
Yeah, that feels like that should have been where they were aiming for. But okay, so are we getting to our best of 2016?
Sure.
Couple weeks late, but
right
later than ever?
Right on time. This is our first show of 2017. We had no other opportunity to do it.
That is true. So, you know, we've, you know, done this in the past. Some years we've skipped it. I mean, we're very irregular when it comes to covering this stuff. And I think the standard disclaimers apply, which is that we certainly didn't play everything. And there's lots of games we wanted to get through that maybe would have been on our lists. I think it's more just a... here's some recommendations. Maybe you missed out on a couple of these. Maybe we'll get you to play something you didn't hear of previously.
Maybe.
But, yeah. Anything else to say about that before we...
I would just add, for me, looking at the games I didn't get to play, it was a huge disappointment or devote enough time to. So I'm... the least proud of my list that I've ever been with the amount of time I've dedicated. Don't think it was a particularly great year overall, but not bad. And I just, again, there's a lot of games I wish I could have beaten, which I didn't. So my list.
You have your list there, Frank?
Yep.
What do you have the list of the games you didn't play?
Oh no, it's enormous.
I mean,
even Battlefield 1, I only did the first location. Titanfall 2, I only did the first couple missions. I tried to sample a bit of everything, but I'll be honest, nothing hooked me the way I thought it would. But I've heard so many great things about Titanfall 2, I want to play it and just haven't.
Yeah, I got the same situation. There's like a lot of games that I've been seeing on other outlets' top 10 lists and stuff, and I have not even touched them, like Overwatch, Firewatch, Last Guardian, Dishonored 2, Hitman, Darkest Dungeon, Stardew Valley. Like, I missed all those games. And those are kind of the big ones that I've been seeing in top 10s. That's not even to mention the ones that I didn't play that weren't in top 10s. Like Battlefield 1, like the new Call of Duty, whatever game, Titanfall 2. I didn't touch any of those games. So it's just crazy how many games came out. But like Frank, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I wasn't really drawn to anything really strongly this year.
Well, there's another factor too, which take all those games that normally come out around the holiday season and then throw on top of it VR, PSVR. And now it's like, okay, that just cut into a bunch of time just experimenting with stuff, trying little games, doing whatever that I would have been playing other stuff, but it was a big time sink right out of the gate. And I would have people over and be playing that instead of other games. And it was just like a fun experience to have. So I do appreciate that, but it definitely cut in or factored into how much time I had to play other stuff.
I also feel like it was kind of a slow year until September, October. And then like all the big AAA games dropped, and I'm not that interested in all of them, but there's certainly a handful I wanted to play. Titanfall 2 is probably the biggest one that I keep hearing good things about and really wanted to try. Played a little bit of Battlefield 1, a little bit of Gears 4, stuff like that. Call of Duty, I mean, I didn't play it. Would it have been a potential candidate for my list? Probably not. But, you know, that's just how we roll, I guess. It's, you know, we're not necessarily getting to every game, whether we think we're into it or not. We're kind of picking and choosing, and even then only getting to some of that stuff. So let's do this.
Let's do it. We're doing 10?
Yep, 10.
Beautiful.
You want to kick it off? Me? Actually? Yeah.
Okay, my number 10 is Gears 4. I did not beat this game, but I feel like it was a good return to form for Gears. I really was liking what I played. I think I maybe played through the first half or so I'm sure I missed a ton. I was really liking the combat. Combat felt great. It did seem like the game had some pacing issues from what I played, where it was really heavy on the combat, and there wasn't that sort of like downtime where you're kind of just walking between places, building up sort of like the team backstory and things like that, or even just story. Just seemed like boom, boom, boom. You're like in it all the time. But yeah, that's about all I have to say. Gears was enjoying what I had. Didn't play any online, but I would like to go back and finish it. Just have not, but it's good enough to make my top 10 this year.
Okay. Frank?
My number 10 is Thumper. Mostly experienced in VR. Did not beat it, but loved the vibe. Love the music and just a unique experience that was one of the better ones in VR, which was the thing this year, man.
All right, so my number 10, Jay asked us for a 3DS game, so I got a 3DS game for him. Box Boy, which is a sequel to Box Boy. I don't know, did I ever talk about Box Boy? I feel like I must have mentioned it, but so, it's a pretty simple game. It's the original was black and white, and it's just you control. It's like a puzzle platformer, control a guy, and you can create boxes of certain lengths, and you can use it to jump up on things. You can use it to hook onto things, and it's just such a simple concept. But the way they keep building on it is amazing. And then with the sequel, you know, again, they build on that again. And when you thought, you know, they've done all they could do with it, they build on it some more. So it is a very simple game. They've added color, some colors this time.
Whoa.
So, you know, hey. But I really dug Box Boy. And, you know, if you're in the market for a quirky little puzzle platformer, maybe give it a go.
Beauty. Number 9, going a little off the board, Punch Club, which I think I talked about in a previous episode. It's basically a management sim where you're a boxer trying to figure out, I think, who killed your dad or something like that. Some typical like 80s, 90s movie tropes. Mm-hmm. Lots of like cartoony nods to 80s cartoons and things like that. And just the gameplay overall is really well done. Really enjoyed the gameplay loop they have of like training, fighting, doing like little side quests. There's lots of little branching story paths you can do. Really enjoyed it. And I can't remember what show I talked about it, but I definitely talked about it on the show before.
Is that with the fighting, is the fighting a simulation as well, or do you actually control the fight?
No, it's just a sim. Like I shouldn't say that. You have some control, but it's not like hit A to punch. It's sort of like you pick a move and then he executes it. Sort of like a turn-based,
okay,
semi-turn-based thing where you pick which moves your guy can do. I think you get 3 or 4 options. So you could choose like a defensive move or whatever. There's like different options, evade, defense, or attack. And you could choose 4 from your whole pool. And then you can sort of like, they're almost like special moves. You can kind of like pepper them in there based on your energy level. It's nothing really crazy, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Cool. Frank?
My number 9 is Gears of War 4. I think it would be higher if I completed it. I would just say I was liking the variety. I saw where they were going. The initial level has robot enemies. They were building to creatures and like really getting a lot of variety visually and with the different types of enemies. And there were so many different guns and weapons to experiment with. I really liked the variety and pacing. And I need to get back and finish it. But I was loving what I saw. And those big horse things, whatever those are fucking amazing. Give me more stuff like that.
I never got to the big horse things. I'll have to keep playing
it's
that.
It's right at the beginning or close to it. It's like, they're like Clydesdales. It's not like anything you fight. They're just a creature in the world. Kind of like Halo Reach had all those creatures. Loving it.
I still don't remember this. But okay. So my number 9 is Firewatch, which could have been higher. I tried to go back. I didn't finish the game. I tried to go back this week and get through it, and I ran into this bug.
Ooh.
Which is, I feel like I'm the only one who has this. The weird thing is, so...
Are we sure this is a bug?
Yeah.
First, I don't know if it's a bug.
Well, let me explain it to you. You guys can tell me. But I don't want this to necessarily make it sound like I'm slamming the game, because I've read online, tried to find other people who had the issue. And I saw a couple of people who had it on PC. Nobody else seemed to have this on PS4. So it's an audio issue. There's a lot of dialogue in the game. It's very dialogue driven. You're kind of wandering through this
forest.
Yeah, it's what's the word? It's a park, a national park. And so you're a park ranger, and it's just you and then this other girl who's communicates with you via walkie-talkie. And so as you're going about the park, she's telling you where to go, and you're having conversations about your what's going on in your lives as well. And all that stuff's really well done. The problem I had, and I didn't have this initially when I first got the game and played it, but going back to it now, I don't have any audio for the dialogue. They're talking, the characters are talking because the subtitles are coming up, but there's no audio for the dialogue. There's audio for sound effects and everything else, but no dialogue. And you know, everything I read was like, oh, it must be something with your surround sound system, like you have it set to stereo and it's trying to send something to the center speaker that's not there or something like that. But I tried everything, couldn't figure it out. Tried uninstalling and reinstalling the game, tried starting a new game, and it just isn't working for
me. Even with a new game, it didn't work?
No.
That's weird.
Very strange and frustrating, because it's such a key component of the game, and I can keep playing without it, but I feel like I'm missing something. So
yeah,
But I mean, just in terms
of wait a sec. I'm assuming you didn't, when you started a new game, did you purge your save data or try it with no save data?
That's a good question. I took my save game and moved it to the cloud, but I guess when I uninstalled it, maybe the save data still would have been there. So maybe that's the issue.
Is this on PS4 or Xbox One?
PS4.
Well, one, you could make a new temporary profile and fire it up and see if it happens still. Because then it would make new save data. And if it still doesn't work, it's definitely you.
Okay.
You mean definitely a bug?
No, it's not a bug at all.
I will try that out. But, I mean, just in terms of, you know, different kinds of storytelling in games. I mean, we keep talking about walking simulator as a genre, which I hate the term, but I mean, it kind of is that. But, you know, it doesn't feel like you're just watching a movie, and it doesn't feel like you're just pushing forward on the thumbstick. Like, you're navigating terrain and exploring, but there is a genuine relationship forming and a story unfolding, and I think it's quite nice to look at as well.
I've had similar bugs to what you're talking about, except it was more like the audio source. They thought I was facing the wrong way. So like if I'm looking at you and you're talking, it's muffled. But if I turn my back to you, it's loud as if I'm right in front of you. So I don't know if that...
But that would be for like specific sources in the game.
Yes,
but this is like audio coming from the walkie-talkie you're holding in your hand.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Hmm.
Yeah, I feel like I saw somebody who had it on PC and they had to like clear out their cache or something. So it must be that I just need to delete my save data and that'll fix it.
But. Yeah, I wonder if there was like some point in your save data where when you updated the game, it just like screwed something up. Where like the save point, that save point in particular, plus the new patch caused the issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that me?
Yep.
No? Number eight, Severed, from our friends of Drinkbox. Not much more to say. I mean, it's just a great sort of like first person dungeon crawl with lots of, you know, fun mechanics, and the swiping on the Vita works really well. And I had a lot of time. I planned a bit and really, you know, enjoyed the game. And you can go back and listen to our Severed podcast with Graham to get all the juicy details about it.
My number eight is Batman VR. It's the highest VR game on my list. And I think the game that made me believe in VR. So it has a special spot in my heart. I know you guys, maybe Sean didn't. Have you tried it yet? You have, right, Sean?
It might be on my list, Frank.
Yeah, Huck tried it. He was obliterated. I don't know if he remembers it, but
well, I remember the next day, that's for sure.
So it may have induced extra sickness in Huck as well. So
yeah, it was close to making my list, but I think my memory is tainted a bit by the adverse effects of the VR / booze.
And I just love the atmosphere. Being right up and close and personal with life-size 3D models, and also the idea of like the rotating puzzles and stuff like that in a 3D space. And the way it played with 360 degrees of game space, I thought it was a ton of fun. And I know it's short, but it is definitely sweet.
All right. Well, my number eight is The Witness.
Ooh.
Good old Johnny Blow came through, in my opinion. I played this, I wouldn't say a ton, certainly didn't beat the game. I played it a fair bit the first couple of weeks it was out and was really enjoying it. And I just have not gone back to it. And I really would like to, because it's just, you know, a very compelling, if you're into puzzle games, which I am, it's just very addictive in terms of, you know, if you get stuck on one puzzle, you can wander over and find something else. I'm a little bit torn on the kind of open world nature of it, because, you know, sometimes you don't know if you're tackling something that you can't tackle yet, but I guess that's all part of the fun of the game. And it actually kind of, strangely enough, inspired me to go back to the original Myst recently.
Nice.
Which I haven't gotten into that far either, but I would say it's heavily inspired by that game, and it's just one of those classics I never played back in the day.
You never played Myst?
No.
Really? I mean, I played Myst, but not very long before I got stuck.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah.
Okay, my number seven, Doom. I didn't play much of Doom, but they nailed what Doom should be in this game. Fast pace, just brutal killing. They love just, like, taking... There's just so many moments where they take, like, they put ridiculous things on the screen, and the main player, like, your character... Not you specifically, but your main character just reacts in a way that's just hilarious and so Doom. So like, there'll be something on a screen about something that you should be taking seriously, and then he just like picks up the whole screen and just like chucks it across the room or something, like just stupid stuff like that you don't expect. And it just was perfect. Everything about what I've played so far has been perfect with that game, and I really liked it. If I played through the whole thing, I'm sure it'd be higher on my list.
I heard they added some interesting mechanics as well, that it's not just a straight-up shooter.
They added, like, they call it glory kills. So you, I believe it's just a melee attack, but when you do that, it drops items for you. So you, there is this sort of...
risk gameplay
loop, kinda. Yeah, of like going in close and then backing up, and you know, like you need to kind of identify targets, and when you're low on health, you take more risk to like go in and get closer. So it's they definitely added that, which really improves the gameplay.
Cool.
Yeah, my number seven is Doom as well, and for all the reasons perfect. Huck said, and I would say finally a shooter that is not cover based and is encouraging fast and furious gameplay. And
yeah.
I think the closest thing I would compare it to out of the last 10 or 15 years is Resistance. And that when I got good at Resistance, I barely used cover at all. I was experimenting with different weapons and, trying different things, but this is obviously Doom. So it's got a different feel, and I loved what I played. Unfortunately, did not finish it.
All right, my number seven is Frank's number eight, which is Batman Arkham VR. And, you know, I obviously it's a very short experience, even for me, who normally would love a short experience, kind of felt like, I wish it was a little longer. But for me, this is kind of the killer app for PSVR, and it's the game that's kind of like, okay, this is what can be done. And I know people have complained that there's no real action in it, which fair complaint, but I love the puzzle stuff and the detective stuff in the Arkham games, and this kind of was a great use of that. Haven't gone back and done any of the Riddler stuff yet. I don't know if you've done any of that, Frank.
No, but, I haven't.
But I did the main story, and I thought it was fun. Although, it does get very dark very quickly. So.
Yeah, that's a good one. My number six is Virginia, which is a cinematic walking simulator, though it's not really like Firewatch. There's no dialogue at all. It's all visual. Relies heavily on the score setting the mood for the game. Heavily inspired by the games by Blendo Games. I don't know if you've played 30 Flights of Loving or Gravity Bone, or no. The newest one, Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Which heard of that one.
I haven't played that one.
Seems like I should play that
one. I played the other two, which I'll talk about later, but they also do this sort of like cinematic, fast cutting between scenes, sort of like a movie would do. But this game is about you play as a female black FBI agent, and you sort of, I don't know, the story gets a little weird at the end, but you basically are kind of traversing through her career for a little bit, and there's like this week-long period of time where the game takes place, and so you progress through this week span of her career, and then at the end you're sort of you're showing like a sort of sped up version of the rest of her life kind of thing, in a weird way, which I won't spoil. but yeah, there's no talking, there's no voice in any of the cutscenes. Everything is through the game gesturing to you, showing you things, having the characters on screen do things. and it's just really well done. The score is incredible. It's done by an orchestra, and so it's really powerful. They do a lot of these quick cut scenes, and so you'll be like walking down a hall, and then all of a sudden it cuts to you walking down a completely different hall, but with the same motion, just to sort of like quickly jump you to the next place. And I think that's what I really like about it. I feel like it's an evolution in the walking simulator, quote unquote, where like Firewatch, you have this huge open environment where it's more about exploring the environment, whereas this game is more about experiencing things in the environment, experiencing the people in the environment, and you don't really have to explore the environment. There is little like gamey things to find here and there, but overall it's not about, you know, going from point A to point B in this big world that's realistic or whatever. It's more about just experiencing the story and what's happening to the people. And, you know, most of the game is done in these small little rooms or hallways or, you know, smaller scale open environments. And it's all about just going basically straight ahead or seeing what's going on in each little corner of that area. And then it'll quick cut to somewhere else in the story. And you just get this quick, these quick little story beats at each place. And it just kind of informs you a little bit more of the story through little, just tiny visual things you pick up as you go. They have a neat little mechanic too, where the mouse, so I played on PC. I don't think it's on any other platforms right now, but like
it is.
Well,
it is.
I bought it is on it? Xbox. I
oh,
believe,
is it? Okay. So you just use the arrow keys or the AWSD on the keyboard to move, but then your mouse can hover like a typical pointer. But the good thing they do is sort of like for traditional point and clicks is if you go over a hot spot, your cursor goes from a dot to a circle. And then once you get close enough to interact with it, it turns into a diamond. So you never really have to search forever to find something in a far off place. You could know from very far away exactly what's interactable in the world, which I found helped sort of like flow the game better, because really in each scene, there's only a few things to interact with before it jump cuts the next scene in the story. And yeah, I just found it really, really good. Like the story they tell is easy to follow despite not having any dialogue at all, or not easy to follow, but you can follow it. At the end, it gets a little strange, but
yeah, I've heard comparisons to Twin Peaks. So
yeah, they do. You know what? I thought about that, and I did get a Twin Peaks vibe initially, but I think it's more just because the score is sort of Twin Peaks. It doesn't have that the like supernatural aspects of Twin Peaks. It's more just the score is very like it tries to set you in that sort of mood.
Okay,
but there's no. It's not like we're going into another dimension with crazy red curtains or little people or anything like that.
Right. Is it like a branching story? Is it all just linear?
I think there are like, from looking at the achievements, it looked like there were tiny branches that you can do, but I don't think they're very impactful on the story. It's like you can help someone if you do something in a certain way kind of thing. Nothing, I don't think anything impacts the final story in any way.
Okay.
But yeah, that was my number 7, and great game, and everyone should go play it. If you like games like Firewatch or any other sort of walking simulator type games.
Okay.
You number mean, 6,
number
right?
Number 6, yeah.
Number 6, yeah.
Okay. My number 6 is Forza Horizon 3. My most played game of the year is probably Forza Horizon 1, which I did everything in when it was back compat. And I love that game, and I love Forza Horizon 3 as well. It's a great environment. Australia, they've added a lot more to amp up a lot of the experiences, and it's probably my favorite racing game series of all time, specifically the Horizon Forza stuff. So even for non-hardcore racing fans, which I am not by any means, I would highly recommend this game as an open-world racer.
All right, my number 6 is a little game called Pony Island.
Uh-oh, I played that game too.
Did you get through it?
I got through it, yeah.
I think Graham originally had mentioned it
on a
previous show, mm-hmm. and I had obviously heard of it and thought, you put it aside as, okay, this is probably a game I will like, and thought this week I should check it out, and I loved it. Like, it's, you know, obviously it's a huge mind fuck. It's very meta. It's, you know, you're playing this, you start off, you think you're playing this little colorful mini game where a pony has to hop over obstacles. And, all of a sudden the game starts glitching, and it's like, you're kind of fighting with the game itself, and you have to, you know, find your way out of this, the depths of the underlying code to beat it, I guess. And
It's a hacking game. He loves it.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of is. It's not.
Well, there's
like,
aren't there those levels where you like move code snippets around and try to.
Yeah, like it is interesting. Bit. It's not like what was that game that I think Telltale did, Hack and Slash,
yes,
where you literally could take objects and attach code snippets to them. And this,
it's more like you're solving math problems.
Yeah, it's kind of like you got this flowchart thing that you're trying to. But I found those puzzles pretty compelling. And then even the actual stupid pony game, how they build on that and keep adding to it.
It's amazing how many times you actually play that game by the end.
So you do play it a lot, but it's actually pretty fun. I mean, there's a couple of frustrating moments maybe, but yeah, like there is a couple meta moments in this game though that really got me. And it's kind of spoilerish, so I can't say, but it was good.
Yeah, I played it too. It did not make my top 10, though. Spoiler alert.
I don't know what you're talking about. But
it was very, like, the odd. I think these type of games that are coming out are interesting to me because there's so many little, like, odd things they throw in. It's kind of like Undertale, where it's just like this game with, like, one core loop that's really not that deep. And then they layer on all this other stuff sort of on the, like the periphery of the game. And they just try to like break the fourth wall when they can and misdirect you into different things. And you don't really know what's going on exactly. There's sort of like in the Pony Island game, there's this conversation with, I guess, the code, we'll say for now. I guess we could say like, it tries to imply like Satan is within the arcade cabinet you're playing the game on. Like they frame it like you are a person in some arcade playing this Pony Island game.
Yeah. They keep talking about, you know, trying to capture your soul or whatever. But the weird thing is it actually kind of like it wasn't just bullshit to me. Like it actually kind of like worked in terms of like this meta level of like, well, yeah, when you're playing a game and you're so absorbed in the game, it's like you are literally,
yeah,
your soul has been like sucked right out of you, and sometimes you can't get out of that situation. But yeah, and like it also had this weird feel of like, you know, I could see somebody who's like, you know, a game developer who's, you know, working long hours and starting to lose their mind, kind of feeling like they would build something like this. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just like it worked on a bunch of levels for me.
And it was short.
Which definitely doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I think I'd be in a little over 2 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's other things you can do in the game, but I got exactly what I wanted out of it in that 2 hours. And I actually really enjoy that sort of experience where you can sit down one or two sittings and just experience everything it has. Like I don't mind paying. Like, I bought Super Hot the other day, which is also another experience. It's like a couple hours. And it was, you know, perfect. Right. Even Virginia, it's like a 2 hour game. And, you know, you're paying $20, but really it's worth it because I don't feel like overwhelmed by them like I do, like Doom or these other big games, Battlefield 1 to play. I don't feel forced as much because I know they're not that long.
To me, it's comparable to sitting down and watching a movie. Like, you know you're going to get through it in a night, and I think that's okay. I mean, I get that price is an issue, and I think you got to find the right price point for that. A lot of this stuff, you can get it on Steam sales and stuff, but yeah, I like those experiences for sure.
Yeah. So my number 5, Final Fantasy 15.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. Here I'm not very far in the game yet, but so far I've been sucked into this one big time. And I've heard the end is not very good, but I'm not near the end yet, so I'm still at the good parts. And it was actually a little higher on my list coming here, and then I knocked it back a few just because I haven't played as much as I think I should have to really have it that high. But I'm really liking the sort of road trip aspect to it, of the friends and how they're interacting together. The combat's pretty fun. They have this mechanic where you can sort of teleport and then get advantages based on how well you hit the enemy.
Is that flash jumping or something, I think they call it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what the term is.
And then you can, the one thing, I've just scratched the surface too, but you like teleport to like places in the sky that automatically refill your meter. Like,
That's important. You recover your health when you go up though. There's a lot of safe points.
Intricate mechanics. I basically did like the tutorial of all the combat systems and stuff like that. And
okay,
I liked what I played.
Yeah. I got stuck in that first kind of open area doing all the stupid hunting quests, and I did like everything you could ask for in that area, and it's really huge. The only thing I must say is that the hunts and the other side quests didn't really take you all over the map. They kind of stayed fairly close to the major sort of like cities or towns on the map, so you didn't really get to explore too much. There's a lot of like hidden craftable things, and each character has their own little specialty, and one of the guys' specialty is cooking. I don't know how that's going to play out in the game, but you can kind of level up their secondary skill. So overall, I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying the interaction of the characters so far, and look forward to playing more of it.
Cool.
My number five is The Witness. I actually did not get hooked at first. Bought it again on Xbox One over the holidays and started over. And I think I put about 12, 15 hours into it and didn't beat it, but I was loving it. And I think I spent a whole day one day just exploring and playing. So love the look, love the vibe. Could be a bit better at like letting me track things, I think. But overall, it's a very unique and really great game experience.
I'm curious because they say they're working on an iOS version of this, and I mean, it seems like it would be tricky to pull off, but I would rebuy it on iOS potentially, because it is the kind of game where it's like I wish I had it with me to just pull out, work on a couple puzzles, and then
take a shit and
get take back shit to work. Yep, exactly,
the shit, so, the shitness.
So my number five is from our friends at Drinkbox, Severed.
Oh, excellent.
Which, you know, got to give these guys props for actually making a Vita exclusive game, although it is now also on iOS, and if you don't have a Vita, you should check it out there. But just nobody...
And Wii U.
Well, yeah, that too. But the Vita in particular, so neglected, and there was so much potential, and this is kind of like... kind of the last hurrah for the system, really. Like, it seems like there's nothing else coming
out. Well, Sony's not doing anything to support it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, it's a game designed for touch screens, and I think they did a lot of interesting stuff in terms of the combat. Like, it, I know there's, what are the Epic games that are on iOS?
Infinity Blade.
So it kind of like, it starts there, but then I think they go way beyond that. Like, and the battles are so furious and insane, but also kind of compulsively, like you got to keep trying over and over again. And I didn't get through it all. I found it more difficult apparently than you guys did, and still want to give it another shot. But
it's a cakewalk, bro.
It's a good game.
Okay. You're done? Good. My number four is Uncharted 4. And really like this game, but it's the only Uncharted I've played where I really have not been compelled to go back and play it again, surprisingly.
Hmm.
And I think that's why I knocked it down. Everything about it is really good. I think it does have some pacing issues, and I think the lack of environmental puzzles hurt it in my eyes. I wish they did more. That's what I really like about the Tomb Raider games and the Uncharted games. This game was more about walking and talking and combat than puzzles, unfortunately. I think there's only one or two puzzles I can remember. And
a lot of climbing. A lot of climbing.
A lot of climbing. Yeah, a lot of climbing. And
climbing with the car.
Climbing with the car, yeah. Hooking up that winch. Really, that's why it knocks down. I mean, it's still a great game, and I think that's where it's going to sit on my list.
All right, my number four is Severed, which you guys have already mentioned, which I love the mechanic. Thought it was very unique. Agree with Sean. The battles were frantic, and you started to have to employ strategy towards the end of the game, and one of the few games I went directly to full completion on this year. That sounded sexual, and I didn't mean for it to.
Full climax.
But I platinumed it as well, and I loved it. So thanks to the folks at Drinkbox.
All right, my number four is a little indie game. That I've seen on
no
a few...
No one's heard of.
No, I think you've probably heard of it, because it's been popping up on a lot of top 10 lists. It just came out, I think, November or December. It's called Owl Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I have heard of it. I've not played it, though.
Only on Steam. It looks really good, though.
Only on Steam, and I... You know, normally that's a bit of an obstacle for me, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to... It looks good. Comparisons to Metroid.
Is it like this year's Shovel Knight?
Maybe a little bit, but it's different, and it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's Metroidvania-esque. To me, it feels more inspired by Zelda, but the interesting thing is that, so you're I don't even know, like you're, I guess you're an owl, you're part of this race
owl
of
boy,
owls,
perhaps?
And you can fly, but the way the main combat works is that you have these people that are going along on your adventure with you, and you carry them in the air, and they have different guns, and you can switch between these people. And so you're flying, and they're shooting, and it's like a twin-stick shooter, kind of. So that's the main mechanic, but you can also land on the ground and jump and kind of platform. It's got some unique stuff, but it also feels kind of like a classic 2D game. And even for somebody like Frank, who's a little bit cynical about pixel art, I think you would agree it's a beautiful looking game.
Yeah, well, I would say if Shovel Knight is a NES retro vision, then Owlboy looks more like an SNES retro vision.
Yeah, definitely.
It looks really cool. I'm hoping for console release, but if it doesn't happen, I might have to stoop down to PC levels.
I would be very surprised if it doesn't go console, just because it seems to be getting a lot of critical acclaim. And
it was $30 on Steam as well. So, and I believe it was in development for a long time. So,
yeah.
Do you know who it's by? Are you looking at it now, Frank?
No. From when I looked it up when it came out.
I'll have to check this one out.
It's a very small team, I believe.
Yeah.
So,
could be like long time, like in their spare time, though.
Yeah, it seems like it's, in my mind, it's like a cave story kind of thing, but...
Cool. My number three, Madden 17.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I am playing the shit out of this
he
game
He bumped
constantly.
This up because he wanted us to talk about how he beat me so bad in this game.
Oh, I wasn't even going to bring that up, but since you brought it up, I think I whooped Frank's ass like 45 to nothing.
Wow.
Frank was used to playing on semi-pro or pro or whatever.
Yeah, then I joined this league and the difficulty's like, I don't even know what the hell's going on here anymore.
Frank couldn't keep up with the speed. but that wasn't why I was going to bring it up. But the game is just so well-tuned. The gameplay is great. Very few complaints about it. And the RPG mechanics that they build in to upgrading your players is a great loop, and you can actually really make your team how you like to play. The gameplay on the field is excellent, very similar to what you see in the NFL. It's got to the point now where I am finding some, you know, plays that work all the time, so it's not as enjoyable as it was when I first got it, though I have recently bumped it up to old Madden. And have been having a lot more trouble, and I'm finding that, you know, I'm getting pressured by the defense a lot more, and it makes it a lot more challenging. So even after bumping it up, it's nice to see that they increase the difficulty to the point where it's harder, not cheaper, which is usually the problem with sports games, where they just like, oh, we'll just bump up everyone's speed two times. And then all of a sudden it's not realistic because guys are moving like Superman across the field. Whereas it doesn't feel like they did that in this game. It feels like they increased it a little bit, but if you adjust your defense and your O-line protection and stuff appropriately, you can, and read the defenses, you can get around it. It's not impossible. And I really appreciate that aspect of the game too, that as you bump up the skill, it doesn't get cheap, which is the problem usually with sports games.
Yeah, it seems
that's why it's so high.
With the difficulty, they tend to tweak like recognition and awareness of players and like
yes.
how often they'll make an interception or hold on to balls and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the one thing I found, especially with zone defense, is that the defenders will follow the guy. They'll kind of drift out of their zone more to cover a player in all Madden than on all pro. Before, like, the windows were larger where you could throw the ball in a zone, and on all Madden it's much tighter and you got to really get that extra, you know, second of time in the pocket to throw that in the tight window. Yeah, just really appreciating like that team. I think it's really almost an underappreciated game now as to how good Madden has become, and not on Game Junk though.
Yeah, it's probably one of my most played games of the year as well. I don't know if it did enough new this year to make my list, but I was loving it and played it.
Yeah,
a couple seasons
that much new for me, but it didn't do that much new for me. But it's just so good, I couldn't resist putting it on here.
I get it, man. You played it a lot. Every time I looked, you're playing that game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My number three is a game that I've seen get no love anywhere, but it was a game that I 100%ed and really enjoyed it. It was Far Cry Primal. And
oh, yeah.
I didn't dislike, but I didn't get hooked into the other Far Cry games. This one is like a totally different vibe. You're training animals, hunting animals, and I love the bow hunting and
animals.
Yeah, like that. I just love shit like that. And this game was perfect for that and had a very. It looked great. I don't know. I love this game, and no one else seemed to really care about it, but I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, that's weird. That was a 2016 game. Like, I feel like it came out 2 years
must have been really
ago,
early.
But
I thought it came out in February of 2016, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, I'm not trying to call you out. I just feel like that is an example
I think
of how
are.
Well, that was like Punch Club came out like January 20th or something. So it was basically last year.
Yeah,
or 2 years ago, I guess. Seems like forever ago.
Did we catch you?
With what?
Is it 2016?
Yeah, of course. I don't even need to check.
Oh, okay. I thought you said that it was or something, but
it is. I know my shit, bud. Don't even try.
All right. Well, we'll move on then. Speaking of games that I feel like didn't get a lot of love. My number three is Unravel.
Whoa. Went off the board.
Before it came out, it seemed like, you know, a lot of people were comparing it to Limbo and games like that. And, you know, it seemed like it was destined to get great reviews. And then it kind of came out and a lot of the reviews were negative. And I'm not exactly sure what people took issue with. I think a little bit the physics stuff, because some of it can be a little bit finicky, like you know what you have to do, but it's just hard to actually accomplish it. And then a lot of people seem to think that it's just really sappy, the story, but I thought it was a really great combination of like interesting mechanics and then actually a story that had something to say. Like, it's, you know, it's not mind-blowing stuff, but I don't know. To me, I felt something, and I liked what they were going for with it. And I thought it was a beautiful game as well. Like, I just love the visuals of seeing this this yarn character in a realistic environment and having to navigate through that landscape. I think it's underrated, and I'm glad there's a sequel.
Well, I think there might be some confusion and some bleed over between Kieran's top 10 games of the year and Sean's top 10 games of the year. We'll see where
it
goes.
Well, it does help when I get those extra hours in, because I did complete this game. So, yeah.
I think
one of the few that I finished. But
I did find it a little sappy at the beginning, but it didn't bother me. But I think part of it is just, I still think there's an EA stigma where
maybe
that type of game coming from EA, gamers just want to attack it. And I don't know why, but I wish I had played more of this game.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And like the last few levels take place, like the seasons change and then it's in snow. And the snow is amazing.
Is it in the vault, the EA Access vault?
I think it is.
I'm not sure. I believe so.
There we go. Go play it. Go check it out.
Yeah.
Okay. My number two is The Witness. Pretty much everything you guys said. The puzzle design is incredible. Open world. I find it not too bad because it's not too far. Everything's pretty much close enough together where I don't feel like I'm traveling forever to get from one place to the other. And the map's small enough where you still kind of know where everything is relative to another, and it's, you can see pretty easily.
Did you not play this with a guide of sorts? Like, is this?
I did once I hit about the halfway point.
Okay.
So I finished probably about half the puzzles, and then I wanted to finish it for our show, and then
And you can live with yourself.
Yeah, I can, because a lot of those puzzles were fucking hard.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate the difficulty and just how well they teach you to learn the puzzles and all the hidden puzzles. There's just so much depth to the game that is really even like difficult to find. And I appreciate they don't just handhold you through it all. I mean, it was too difficult for me and I didn't have the time, the patience to really figure it out on my own. So, yeah, I just really respect the game. I think more so than, like love playing it. I did love playing it too, but I think I respected it much more from a design perspective and even a technical perspective. I mean, it looks gorgeous and plays well and everything like that. So
yeah,
that's number two.
The incremental learning and teaching of the puzzles is pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
My number two is Inside, which I'm assuming is Huck's number one now. but again,
hey, way to spoil it.
A great puzzle game from Playdead. I wasn't as hyped about the ending as everyone else was, but what I loved about it was the unique ways and variety of solving puzzles and how many times it flipped the script and incorporated a new puzzle solving mechanic. And it was fantastic.
Frank and I might have the same number two and number one. My number two is also Inside. And, you know, obviously loved Limbo at the time. The whole black and white kind of desaturated shadow world thing feels like it's getting a little overdone, but these guys started it so they can do whatever the hell they want. But Inside certainly feels like a successor to Limbo, but goes off in its own weird directions. And the atmosphere is amazing. And it's just like, you can talk about what happened and I'm sure you can find some meaning in it. But to me, it was a great, mind fuck, I guess, is in the sense that you have no idea what's coming next, and some of the places that it goes to and the controls and mechanics that you end up having to learn on the fly are not anything you could have predicted. So
my number one is Inside.
There you go.
As predicted. And yeah, all the things you guys said, also just the design in general is incredible in this game. The animation is incredible. The lighting's incredible. I watched a GDC talk from the render artists or the render programmers, and I just it was literally like half the talk was about one of the first scenes where the truck comes in and the lights shine on the boy and you have to go hide behind a car, or no, not the car lights, the flashlight. And it was like half an hour or 45 minutes just about how they did that flashlight light and like project the shadow out and like all this different stuff they used to get speed improvements. And I was just kind of mesmerized because I'm not a graphics programmer about how much effort you put in to make this light and shadow look just how you want it. And there's all these little, blur techniques you use to not have to sample the light as much, and all this stuff, like just incredible stuff to cast the right shadow, and really just elevated my respect for the game even more. Not to mention the physics and everything are just great in that game. And yeah, that's why it's my number one. I think Frank and I talked about it pretty lengthy in the previous show. So that one, that's why.
Okay. Frank?
Well, my number one is Uncharted 4, A Thief's End, which we talked about on the show, and it's certainly not my favorite Uncharted game, but definitely the best thing I played all year. I agree with Huck. Pacing issues, a little too much climbing, some story nitpicks, but all of that stems from how far they've raised the bar in terms of storytelling, where I actually care and then care enough to nitpick the story, where most video game stories, I'm like, this is stupid. Who cares? Whatever. I really could care less. So again, the fact that they introduced a new character that I think is better than the main character in the game, and that the whole brother relationship I thought was fantastic, technically astounding, visually probably the prettiest game I've ever seen in my life. And yeah, I also haven't replayed it because, in my opinion, it's too long. Like, I think they are concerned with game length too much these days after The Order and other games were slammed for being short. And I thought it could have been a tighter, better experience, but still unbelievable.
My number one, also Uncharted 4, which, you know, I am a little torn in the sense that, like, when I started making this list, it was just like a given. Like, I didn't even really second guess it. And I think it's not a perfect game, but it's just, even an imperfect Uncharted game is like so far above anything else I played. And, you know, one of the few AAA games I put a fair amount of time into and felt compelled to come back to until I finished it. Yeah, I mean, I think these games are fun to play. They're big blockbuster action movies, but I think in terms of storytelling, they do some interesting stuff. They push things forward. But the way the game ended and that whole thing was unique and interesting. Yeah. I got no problems with Uncharted 4 at the top of anyone's list. I think it deserves to be there. And yeah.
It's an incredible game.
Yeah. So do we, I guess I kind of have a couple honorable mentions or also games that maybe I didn't put enough time into. Like I did play some of The Last Guardian. I don't know. Did you spend some time with this, right, Frank?
Yeah, I think I'm about 4 hours in, and I suspect from what I've heard, if I finished it, I think I would probably have it on the list. But up until this point in the game, the story isn't that compelling. Visually awesome. I love the caricature of Trico, like just the animations and the personality of Trico. Mm-hmm. And I love the score. Absolutely love it. And the opening credits are amazing. So I feel like it's highly dependent on story, which I have not finished, but there are frustrating puzzle elements where the trick is not even a trick. It's like Trico just needs to jump up to the right thing and you're not really sure, can it make that jump or not? And there was times where I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? And I just walk to a wall and it ends up jumping like 60 feet in the air, and that's all I had to do. So I don't find that as rewarding as I think it should be as a puzzle solving mechanism, but I still love the game.
Yeah. I mean, I've played maybe probably less than that, but I think it could have made my list. I was really enjoying it, and I think visually it's amazing. And yeah, some of the puzzle stuff, you really it's trial and error, I guess, but I don't know. I'm kind of okay with that, I think. But yeah, I was digging it.
I do get a little annoyed with the acceptance of the frustration where it's, oh, well, it's a big beast. You can't control what it does. That's part of the game. You can't tell it exactly what to do. It's got a mind of its own. And I think that's a bit of a cop-out defense for, controls that can be frustrating at times.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line there. But it, to be fair, it, like, that creature does feel alive. And it's just, you know, interacting with him. And I immediately, from the first half hour, felt, like, attached to this creature. So I think that's an achievement in and of itself. As I mentioned, didn't play Titanfall 2, heard lots of good things, would like to have played it. What else? Hyper Light Drifter, didn't play that. Mm-hmm. Seems like it could have been, seems like it could have been up my alley. Didn't play Oxenfree, Quadrilateral Cowboy, which you mentioned, Huck City.
Yep.
It's kind of a hacking game, apparently. Seems like it could be good. I would have liked to play Dishonored 2. That's something where, like, I feel like I'm interested. If I had more time,
I would like Dishonored 1.
Yeah, and I've heard 2's like even better. But
yeah, me too.
And I just wanted to give a little shout out. You know, it doesn't really deserve a spot on my list, and I think as a game it's not amazing, but Pokemon Go was a phenomenon, and I think there's some potential there. I really liked, like, for a couple weeks there, I was pretty into it, and just that idea of moving through the real world and having that map to a game world, I think there is potential to do more with that, and I hope some people are working on some cool stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
But I just, yeah, as a game, like, I don't think they rolled out the features fast enough, and I don't know what their user base is at now, but they must have lost a ton of people after the first month.
I got an honorable mention. I played Superhot, and I think you would really like it, Dwight, because it's very like Pony Island. It's this, like, game within a game thing. So, like I was talking about with Pony Island, there's a game loop in Superhot that has to do with every time you move, the game time moves. So if you stand still, well, I shouldn't say that. If you stand still, time moves very, very slowly. But if you move fast, things move at real time. And if you shoot a weapon or throw a weapon, it moves a little faster. It's almost like a fast forward. And the whole point is to defeat the enemies that are coming at you, either through shooting them or hitting them. I think it takes like 3 like melee hits to defeat a guy, or you could throw things at him to count as a melee hit, or have them get shot by their own people. And there's just a whole bunch of little mini puzzles where the whole purpose is just to figure out and dodge bullets and defeat everyone. And then there's this meta game wrapped around that where you are playing Super Hot on your VR in your room at your computer, and then you launch the Super Hot game like from within the game, and then every time you complete a series of like 4 or 5 levels, you're booted back to the main screen where you have options. You can look at demo levels, you can look at these prototype games. There's like this tree cutting axe game you can play like right within the Super Hot real game. Like, it's getting a little confusing to describe.
And
then there's this chat room you can go to about hacking. And I literally sat there laughing my ass off for like 20 minutes just reading the dialogue that was going on in this hacking chat room. It was hilarious. I'm like, who would take the time to put this much? Like, I thought there had to be a clue in here. And I was just laughing for like 20 minutes reading this hacking dialogue that's going on. And I don't know if it's just like a little Easter egg. I don't know if I stayed in there a little longer, something would have popped up, like some sort of achievement or something. But like, if you liked Pony Island, I think you'll really like Super Hot. And there's this whole thing where, well, actually, I don't want to ruin it, but there's this whole sort of like super meta thing that happens exactly like you're describing with Pony Island, except I think you'll enjoy this more. And I really expected this game to make my list, but I found, I don't know, at the end, after I had beaten it, I enjoyed it and I really liked it, but I just didn't really have it didn't crack the top 10. It wasn't as high as I thought it was going to be. I didn't have the lasting, you know, feels for it. And it definitely is this really neat meta game within a game thing they have going on. But the main loop of puzzles I really enjoyed on their own, but I almost feel like there was too few. And then it really ramps up in difficulty near the end, which wasn't really a bad thing, but I did have to replay a few of them quite a few times in order to figure out there's almost like one optimal solution to go through them, and there's not much deviating from that path, I think. So that sort of thing was tricky, but yeah, I think you would love the meta aspect of this game, and apparently there's a super hot VR that might be even better.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds. I don't know if that's out yet, but
is it available on any consoles currently, or is it just Steam? Yeah,
yeah, I'm pretty sure it's on Xbox. I'm almost positive. Oh.
So I played on Steam, and you probably can get by with it on Xbox, but I must say the precision of the mouse was very handy.
Hmm, yeah,
and even like looking around advances the time faster, so you need to be really cautious with your mouse movements, and I don't know if the right analog stick would really give you the precision. I mean, it might be more frustrating on a console. But overall, I really like the game, and I'm probably gushing about it to the point where it probably should be on my top 10. But for some reason, there was something about it I just didn't feel it cracked the top 10.
Yeah,
but it was a game that people should try.
Sorry, I had heard about the main mechanic for sure, but I was not aware of this whole meta aspect to the game at all.
Yeah, it's not really talked about for some reason. I kind of found it like almost every trailer is like shoving the like super hot in your face. I don't know if you've seen any of the trailers, but they throughout the game, they constantly just say super hot, super hot. And it gets like it starts to get so repetitious that it becomes funny. But at the beginning, I'm like, this game is so stupid. Why are they doing this? Like, and even like, the game team is called Super Hot Productions, and it's published by Super Hot Productions. So there's like no real creativity in like that aspect. The game's called Super Hot, and Super Hot's all over the game, like within the text. So at first I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this game. It seems weird in that regard, but it just, they throw it at you so much that it becomes almost like this running joke within the game. And yeah, that was the weird thing about this game is everyone just talks about the gameplay mechanic of the slow time, you know, movement with time aspect, which is really well done. But no one talks about the whole meta layer of it, which I'm surprised because that's like the thing that would sell you on it for sure.
Yeah, although if it was just kind of thrown in as a joke or something, then maybe it would feel like a gimmick or something, but
I don't think it is. Like, it's pretty key to the storyline of the game.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to keep it a surprise or something. I don't know.
I guess so, but I mean usually like reviews and stuff will talk about that without trying to spoil it, but it seems like that's not even talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you beat the game, there's like challenges and stuff, so like there is more gameplay. I looked on how long to beat it. And the main story is like 2.5 hours, but then to complete everything, it's like 20 hours. So there's obviously like quite a lot of challenges that unlock later on. So I don't know. I really enjoyed it. If you guys like meta type games like Pony Island or other stuff like that, definitely pick it up. And it's not that long as well.
Well, I think it is. I mean, I was aware of it, and the main mechanic does sound interesting, so I kind of wanted to check it out just based on that, but maybe I'll have to bump it up.
Yeah,
on my list.
I think what might be scaring people off is on Steam, it's like, in Canadian, it's like $35, and I got it on sale for like $23. I think it was like 40% off or something, and really $20 is definitely worth it. $35, I think, would still scare me off even after playing it and enjoying it. So if you can get it on like a little bit of a sale, I would say definitely take advantage of it.
It's $25 on Xbox.
$25 on Xbox, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Frank? Any honorable mentions, other stuff to mention?
No, as you know, I live life with no honorable mentions or regrets. My top 10 is my top 10, and that's all there is to it, Sean.
Well said. What about other stuff you guys played over the past couple months that didn't make your top 10? Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
I got something that would have made my top 10 if it was like 2012.
Yeah.
Played through Binary Domain again. Oh my God, that game is so good. I am just in love with this game again. Even more than before, you know? It's like that old long lost love you rekindle your love with. That's me in Binary Domain. It's just the combat is so deep. The character interactions are so great. The story is like this cheesy 90s action, just horrible, like over-the-top action flick. Loving every minute of it. My only complaint about the game this time through was the last quarter feels like it's just tacked on. Like a whole bunch of empty rooms with like guys spattered throughout, whereas like the first three quarters of the game, there's all these unique mechanics that you never see again. Like the first level has you swimming underwater, using grappling hooks to rappel up things, going across movable bridges, all this unique stuff that really is awesome that you never see again and they never use again. And then at the end, it's just like, it just feels like they're padding out the game to get to the end by going through all these these areas. And that's really my only complaint. And this game's just so good, guys. Like, seriously, it's so good. I love it.
Okay. We'll have to,
by next show, I'm probably going to play through it again on a harder difficulty, so you'll get another report.
Is there a remastered version of this on the way?
I hope so. Yeah, there needs to be.
We might have our first Game Junk re-review.
Re-review. Yeah, there it is. Sure. 5 out of 5. 6 out of 5, I'd say.
If it goes back compat on Xbox One, I'll give it a shot.
I bought it twice now. I bought it on PS3 and Steam. It's that good.
Well, for me, I mentioned Last Guardian, which I am liking a lot, but haven't played that much. And I played the first bit of Battlefield 1, which I really liked. I don't know if I liked it quite as much as I thought I would. I find the levels, like expanding the multiplayer gameplay and systems into full levels, actually was a bit tedious and repetitive, but I still liked it. And the other game I've been playing a ton of recently is Diablo 3.
Really?
They announced like that Diablo 1 recreation in it, and I want to try that. And in order to do that, you have to beat the game. So I've been trying to beat the game, and I'm almost at the end. So I think it's only available for January, so I have 2 days to finish that.
Well, I know what you're doing tonight. Power running Diablo 3.
Well, I kind of want to play Resident Evil when I've done this, so I don't know.
Yeah, you definitely have to play that. Only a couple things really to mention for me. I mean, I've been in the depths of Lego video games for the past couple months. Like, I am just full on overload on this stuff because, you know, Kieran's become obsessed with these games, and they are, I mean, as much as I've complained about, you know, there are some things that are frustrating about them. They are one of the best co-op, family-friendly co-op games out there. There's just not a lot of stuff like that available.
And, do you get frustrated because he's better at them than you?
He's pretty good. And he is definitely... it won't be long before he's putting me to shame. Let's put it that way. But finished LEGO Marvel Super Heroes and got to the point where you're unlocking all the characters and then you have to get all the Deadpool bricks. I don't know if you guys have ever played through to the end of any of the LEGO games. I guess they all have this format.
Yep.
And it's like, it's an insane time sink, but
just for the record, I don't know if you know this, you can use cheat codes to do that and it doesn't punish any progress or achievements.
Yeah, I found that out after a while and it made life a bit easier. I mean, we're at the point now where we have as many coins as we need, so it's just time finding all the characters, how to unlock them. The worst stuff is all the race missions. Some of them are really
the flying race missions blow in that game.
Yeah,
and the scripting, like design scripting in that game, was terrible. Like, they're so buggy. If you don't do certain things exactly right, the game just like soft locks and stuff like that. So, I mean, I like the love for those games, but they get a bit of a free pass, I might have to say.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like they've kind of leveled off, and most of them seem to be on Metacritic around 75 to 80. Like, nobody's saying they're amazing anymore. Although I guess Lego Dimensions maybe did add some new stuff to the mix, and I think this year they have that Minecraft Lego thing coming out. But, I mean, there's still other licenses. I'd like to see them do Lego games of. It seems like they are focusing now on Lego Dimensions and Lego World. So I don't know if anything else is coming down the pipe, but we did play a bit of Lego Avengers, which is not that dissimilar to Marvel superheroes, but it's playing through the movies. So the story is actually kind of fun, like going back through scenes from all the Marvel movies. What else did I want to mention? Oh, so I don't know how much I want to get into this, but we did have an email from somebody who was questioning my Metroid fandom a little bit.
Oh my goodness.
This was Peter
who how was asking, dare you, Peter,
asking me if I had played the Metroid 2 fan remake, which came out last year. And I'm aware of it. I have it, but I haven't really played it. And to be honest, it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't play a lot of PC games. I'm not going to sit down at my PC to play this. Although I say that, and I am currently playing through Metroid Prime 2 on my laptop.
Beautiful.
So I started thinking about the fact that I hadn't finished Metroid Prime 2 or 3. And I was like, I kind of want to play those games. I'm kind of itching to play a Metroid game, but the motion controls, I don't want to go through that. And like, is there any way out of that? And apparently there kind of is. It's not perfect, but if you have the Dolphin emulator and you rip the Wii game to an ISO and you play it on that, you can remap the controls to like an Xbox controller.
Hmm.
And I was playing through it like that, and it mostly worked. I mean, it's hard to say because my laptop's not the greatest. So like when there's a lot of stuff going on screen, it gets a little bit of slowdown. But for the most part, it worked. And I think I'm going to try and keep going with it. So we'll see what happens. But just kind of an interesting little thing maybe people aren't aware of. It's I mean, I feel like it's legal. I own the game. So I don't know. But yeah.
I've got a couple other quick things, Sean.
Okay.
I played, kind of forgotten, Dead Rising 4 a little bit, which I liked, but didn't get much time with.
Kind of forgot that even came out.
Yeah. I also, Jackbox Party Pack 3, played a bunch over the holidays with the groups, and we played it the same night as the VR, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, the thing I play the most, which is a new addition to the iPhone, the Microsoft Solitaire Collection, I play constantly. And you can get achievements on your iPhone. It is the greatest thing that's ever been created. I love it.
Spider Solitaire?
Every solitaire, bud. Daily challenges. It is so addicting. I love it.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Well, speaking of old games and Resident Evil, for some reason I fired up my PS3 and threw on Resident Evil 5. I think I was going through the PS Plus games I'm going to lose in March. And I never played Resident Evil 5. I said, you know what? Let's throw this on. Go on to the co-op. Make it online. There's going to be no one out there, but whatever. I'll throw it on anyways. Start playing. Within 2 seconds, some guy hops on with me. He is fully decked out with everything you can think of. This guy literally walks me through the entire game, shows me where everything is. Like,
that's awesome. Your personal guide.
It's my personal ass-kicking guide. I think after the first stage, so I was just still trying to learn the controls, he had killed like 36 guys. I had killed two. Like, I literally was doing nothing and just walking with this guy through the game. It was the perfect experience.
Well, that and was kind of like how Dwight played it with me, only I was normal.
I played like 2.5 chapters with this guy, and then he left. I was so sad. I was like, oh, my personal guide is gone. Now I actually have to figure out where to go in this game. And then within maybe 2 more minutes, some other new guy jumped on with me. Now, he wasn't as superpowered as the first guy, but he still basically walked me through another chapter or two. Hmm. It was great. It was the greatest experience I've ever had in a Resident Evil game. I didn't have to learn anything. I didn't have to pay attention. I just ran with them. It was great. Perfect.
It's kind of interesting just thinking about that. That's how some people choose to spend their time. Like, they've mastered this game, but they still like playing it. So they're like, let's jump on co-op, people who haven't played this game before, and I'll help them through it.
I couldn't even believe there was people on there. Like, two? I was like, okay, one? Okay, there's one crazy guy out there that just plays this game. But, like, two? I couldn't believe it. It was amazing to me, because like, when did Resident Evil 5 come out? I mean, 3-4 years ago now?
More.
Yeah.
And there's still guys completely devoted to just playing this game, like, on a random Thursday night or whatever it was. Like, I couldn't believe it.
I think Resident Evil 5 and 6 are severely underrated. And I think I'm preparing for a hot take that they are better than 7 and more fun to play. There's something about the Resident Evil series. It's like, it's really interesting how many changes there are, but there's still kind of this consistent visual style and writing. I wish I had enough time to go and like play Resident Evil 1 again, Resident Evil 0, Code Veronica I never played. Revelations on PS3 or Xbox 360, I'd love to play again. It's a series I really want to play.
What about those new ones that were, you know, there's like that 2-part or 3-part series? Is that Revelations or is that something else?
That's Revelations 2.
Yeah, Revelations.
Oh, Revelations 2. Mm-hmm. Huh. I think I have one of those. I don't know if I ever played it.
I love it. And I'm hoping maybe Resident Evil 7. I like that. I hear it's kind of short, so I'm hoping getting through that will get me back.
I heard eight to 10 hours. So.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a great length for me.
It's a horror game, I guess. I got a couple more things I played quickly. I dove back into Star Wars Battlefront, and I bought the season pass when I think it was just after the Death Star, it was when the new movie stuff came out.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I think the season pass is like 25% off or something. I'll just get it. Because I wanted to play the Death Star stuff anyways. And I wouldn't mind looking at the Bespin maps. And I still really enjoy that game. I was getting my ass handed to me. Because I had nothing compared to these guys that have been playing it. But I got into some of the space battles. Where you're actually out in space defending something in an asteroid field. That was really great and fun. I really enjoyed my time with it, and the new maps were fun. It seemed like there was good swings, and there's still a lot of people playing that game. It was a good experience. I would like to go back and play more. It'd be fun if we can get another group going in that, but I think the time has passed for that game.
Well, I do have to mention then that I played the VR mission, the X-Wing VR.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. How's that?
And did you play that, Sean?
No, because I'm not going to rebuy it on PS4 just for that.
What a welfare.
If you want to game share with me, then maybe I will.
We can do that. I really liked it. I mean, it's a bit boring at times, but just, first of all, the menu, it's a white, you know, the white screens for the menus with the models. You're in the VR and it's like a huge AT-AT walking in front of you. And it's just amazing. And then you get in to the X-Wing, and then you're doing the flying mission, and it's pretty incredible. I don't know if it's something I'd revisit a bunch, but definitely a fun experience.
Cool. In that same PS Plus game, I played Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. This is basically just a walking simulator. And you're kind of going from point to point, following this glowing ball around the world. And at each sort of like stop, they give you a little insight into the story, quote unquote story. with these little vignettes of ball of light people talking to each other. And it's kind of like the same four or five people you're following throughout this huge world. And I really did not enjoy this game. Not only are you walking through this massive place, but there seems to be a lot of bugs with where the light goes. So sometimes it'll like lead you down a path only to come all the way back and lead you down somewhere else. I found the story didn't really grab me in any way. It seemed like they were just talking about personal interactions they had, and I couldn't really follow how they related to the grander story they were trying to tell. And it got to the point where I got so lost and I couldn't follow the light to anywhere that made the story progress anymore, that I gave up on it. And I did not enjoy this game at all. I don't know why it has pretty high Metacritic, I believe. So I would not recommend that game. The other game I played a bit of XCOM 2, which is basically the original XCOM or the original remake of XCOM. But I didn't like this one as much because they focused a lot more on making you have a time limit in each mission. And so in the original XCOM, you could slowly progress forward and strategize a little more as to like how to take out the enemy. Whereas this, there seems to be like every other mission, there's, you need to get there within 8 turns. So you really need to stretch yourself out over the map, which really puts you in compromising situations, which is not something I like about those type of games. I like being able to take my time and strategize and make sure you're making the right moves to not lose your guys, especially in a game with permadeath where you make one wrong move and all of a sudden your whole team's wiped out. It just wasn't fun. It was almost too stressful and it made it too difficult. And there was some other bugs with, and like doors not opening up that were supposed to open up. And it was just a little too frustrating. And I wouldn't recommend XCOM 2, at least not in its current form. Maybe if it gets patched a little bit. And the last game I played a bit of, which actually Frank, I believe, recommended last show, was that Jotun game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got a chance to play anymore. I was really impressed with the camera work and the sprite work of that game. They do a lot of little like neat little zoom outs, even though it's a 2D game, with the map zooming it out, giving you kind of like cinematic views of the vista and everything. But I felt the controls were a bit stiff, and I also wasn't really driven to keep, I don't know, there wasn't enough driving me to go to the next place. It seemed like there was just this kind of big hub worlds where you can kind of go and do whatever you want. And I don't know, I just didn't really, I just wasn't driven to keep playing that game. I don't know if I'll go back to it. I know you were saying you were really enjoying it, but it didn't really capture it for me. It's kind of like a Zelda game with exploration aspects.
Yeah, I don't think there's that much exploration, actually. At first, I was a little intimidated by that, but you realize it's a pretty small game loop, actually, in terms of the levels. And I do agree the hub world might seem like you could do anything, but I don't think you actually can. You can.
Okay.
There's only a choice of two things to do at any given time, but it's kind of like a isometric Shadow of the Colossus, and I don't know. I love the scale of it, and I love the hand drawn animation stuff. It looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it for me.
Speaking of which, does Cuphead have a release date yet?
No. Another trend I do not like in games: advertising how hard the game is. Like,
oh yeah, that's a surefire way to get me to not buy it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are examples of fun games that are hard, and something like Super Meat Boy had a very tight, small loop. Like, when those games have a very small stage or looping setup, I would agree. But I don't know. Whenever I watch people stream that game, I don't get the sense that they're having that much fun.
Which game? Cuphead?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to buy it for sure, and I think it looks amazing, but I'm a little worried about how much fun it is.
So I guess since Blake is the only person who actually took the time to send us a junk mail, not that we really wanted any for this show, but I guess we should at least give him a quick response here. He says, hey there, game men. And if you want to email us, gamejunkpodcast@gmail.com. He says, hey there, game men. I just sold my Xbox One and Wii U because they're total shit.
Oh, shut up. Xbox One is amazing.
Special shout out to Frank for convincing me to buy these turds. Anywho, what's the worst console you've ever owned? Handhelds included. Cheers, Blake in Boston. P.S. I'm about 3 hours into Resident Evil, and this game is just begging for a live stream by the KOC. Seeing Frank suffer through jump scares in PSVR is a no-brainer. Make it happen. Well, Frank has already bowed out of VR gameplay for Resident Evil, so that's not going to happen, I don't think.
Oh, not yet. I might try it tonight, Sean.
Yeah?
Okay. Although it is pretty late. I don't think...
Do we know if you can actually live stream VR?
I don't know. I think so.
Maybe we should look into that, because it could be fun to do. Maybe not even for Resident Evil, but for other stuff.
Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Yeah, that would be cool. So, worst console. This was a tough question. I don't really have a great answer. I think for me, it probably is the Wii. Even though I had a lot of fun initially with it, I feel like there wasn't a lot of great stuff released for it. I'm kind of like, look, I have one hooked up to a shitty TV here in my office right now, and I've kind of been looking back on some of the games that were released for it, and there's a few, like Super Mario Galaxy. I never really played either of those. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, not a whole lot.
I think I agree with you. I can't think of anything else that really stands out. There are like a few really good games on the system. Like, I really like Xenoblade and Zack and Wiki and Mario Galaxy. But really, for the amount of games that came out for that system, there wasn't really much quality there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even just like how you navigate it wasn't really that fun. Wasn't that smooth. I would agree.
I also never owned a lot of the weird kind of like the Neo Geos and the TurboGrafx and all those, although a friend of mine had a TurboGrafx and I thought it was pretty cool. So I don't know if that's, maybe there's something in there like Virtual Boy or something. Never owned
32X,
that.
32X maybe.
Yeah. But Frank, what do you say?
Well, I don't think I can count the Ouya because I never took it out of the box. It's appreciating as we speak in my closet. So I was debating, is the 32X a console?
I guess it'd probably be an add-on.
I mean,
because you can't play it independently, right? You need the Genesis.
Yes. And if it counts, it is definitely the worst console I ever bought.
The Sega CD is also pretty shit.
It is up there, but I mean, I love Sewer Shark.
Snatcher.
There are certain experiences I love on that console. There's, other than the novelty of something like Calibri, I don't think there's anything I would revisit the 32X for.
Even that Doom port?
Well, exactly. That was something good at the time, but there's a million better ways to play Doom, and it's got the worst Sonic game. And virtual games that... Actually, I would play the Star Wars arcade game again. That was kind of fun. But yeah, that's definitely the worst.
Did anyone have a Saturn?
I did. My friends did too. They bought it early. They were very early adopters. I was a late adopter. I think Saturn's pretty good, and there's enough merit in that system. And Dreamcast. So as a system, I think it might be Wii U.
Yeah, although I feel like there's better stuff for the Wii U than the Wii, but maybe...
I don't think so. Galaxy 1 and 2 are amazing. They destroy... 3D World, yeah. And Skyward Sword, yeah. I didn't finish it, but I love the art style. I think it's a better entry in the Zelda series. Now, if you include Breath of the Wild on the Wii U, maybe not. Maybe that's where it starts to become close. And Oh, and Twilight Princess, which I actually like a lot and plowed through right when it came out. And I can't forget the novelty of both Wii Sports games when they came out. They were great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the Wii has its place. So I think the Wii U is the worst console.
But, you know, then there's also the consideration of the whole, like, menus and, like, I just feel like Virtual Console and all that stuff was terrible on the Wii. Like, it's at least slightly better on the Wii U, but...
Actually, the one thing I like about the Wii is I could play GameCube games on it, which I never had a GameCube.
That's true, but you can play Wii games on the Wii U.
Yeah, but it's through that super cumbersome thing, and I also don't have Wii U, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the answer.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. Did you ever own a 3DO, Frank?
Not in its heyday. I have one here right now collecting dust.
Oh, okay. Because I think...
And a TurboGrafx-16 and TurboGrafx-16 CD and Jaguar.
Nice.
And Jaguar CD.
Jaguar's got to be pretty bad, but I guess you didn't own it.
Yeah, I excluded those as I did not own them in their heyday.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I think Jay had a 3DO at one point. I seem to remember that.
All I have to say is definitely not the Xbox One. That's for sure, Blake.
Yeah, a little troll in there. Maybe back it up with an explanation, but that's about it. So... Was it a shorter show? It was. Under 3 hours. There you go.
Just leave it blank until it goes over three at the end.
So let's look at upcoming releases. So we got Resident Evil 7 out now.
Mm-hmm.
Double Dragon 4. Haven't heard anything about this. You guys know anything about it?
No. Don't even talk about it.
I heard someone talk about it on another podcast saying, I think it's just a 2D beat 'em up.
Yeah, like I think it's going back to the roots.
So.
Could be interesting, I guess. For Honor, February 14th. Halo Wars 2, February 21st. Lego Worlds, February 24th. Horizon Zero Dawn, February 28th.
Fuck.
Oh boy. There we go.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, my God.
Then
that's
the 28th. Then the Switch comes out on the 3rd.
Yep.
And then...
You only got a week to power through Horizon.
And then fucking... Mass Effect is going to be in EA Access preview two weeks later.
Yeah.
This is busy. Furious.
And then you got Star Trek Bridge Crew in there too, March 14th.
Oh my goodness.
There's actually some good stuff coming up. I'm guessing the next show may be after the Switch launch.
Probably.
Probably, yeah. With Horizon. That could be a big action-packed show.
Yeah.
I am so excited for Horizon. Oh, my God.
It's going to be good. That's going to be your real Zelda. That one.
Hmm. That could be an interesting comparison, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking forward to Resident Evil as well. Let's not skip over that, because that could be the first true, full VR AAA experience. So
that's what some people are saying.
I'm hearing good things about For Honor, too, so...
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think so.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay. You will believe it, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So what do we need to... We need to remind people to check out Embers of Mirim.
Yes. Embersofmirim.com. MIRRIM.com. Embers, EMBERS, of OF. And you can follow my Twitter as well, Dirty Frank with Yours and Dirty. I'll be retweeting stuff. Come see me at PAX South. Say hello. Try the game out. And please try to seek out the Steam Greenlight page and support the game. That would be a huge favor.
Did you get Royal Rumble tickets, Frank?
No.
Ouch.
It's not completely off the table yet, but...
Okay. I hope you have fun in San Antonio. Better pick up some Spurs merchandise for me while you're there.
Well, we might be doing a Spurs game instead of the Rumble, so...
Oh,
I'll definitely...
Nice.
If there's anything specific you want, you let me know.
Not really.
Okay.
David Robinson. Anything David Robinson, if that exists anymore, which it probably doesn't. Okay. Huck City.
Mm-hmm.
My Angry Commute on Twitter.
That's correct.
Equilibrium.
Sis. Mm-hmm. Lots of nothing going on.
Anything
there
to announce? No. Okay.
No. Just doing contracts right now, and I might actually do a blog post on my website in the next few weeks. So I guess maybe look out for that. It will be about production tools. Hmm. Very interesting stuff.
Okay. Nice.
Riveting discussions.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds great.
To be had.
We'll have to consider a live stream of VR if it's possible at some point. But yeah, other than that, stay tuned to GameJunkPodcast.com, Facebook.com/GameJunk, at GameJunkPodcast, and you can follow me at FilmJunk. And I think that wraps it up.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.